desert and the great American soggy Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world. This program, Coast to Coast AM, circulating all the way around the globe, one way or the other. I'm Art Bell. The weekend edition underway. How you doing? We'll review the world news a little bit. Never a very happy thing to do. Do a couple of other things and then do open lines until we get to our guest next hour. His name is Dr. James Hart. Promises to be very, very interesting indeed. A lot about... Well, you know what? I think I'll just make you wait. Biofeedback, I guess, is one little hint I could throw you, but it's going to be interesting. Mohammed Abbas declared victory in Palestinian presidential election Sunday after exit polls showed him winning by a wide margin. So you see, every now and then, exit polls are right, giving him a decisive mandate to renew peace talks with Israel, rein in militants, and try to end more than 4 years of Mideast bloodshed, a lot of blood. The victory of the staid and pragmatic Abbas, who opposes violence and has the backing of the international community, was expected to usher in a new era after 4 decades of chaotic corruption and corruption-riddled rule by Yasser Arafat, who passed on to whatever... virgin territory on November 11th. In Indonesia, one of the rescue planes has crashed, a U.S. helicopter actually, on a relief operation, and that has suspended operations for at least a short time. Strong aftershocks, as well as security concerns, provided yet more challenges as we try desperately to get things to those who need them. After this awful event, a videotape, in fact, shot as a tsunami swept through Indonesia's Aceh province, aired for the first time Sunday. It showed a roiling torrent of dark brown water engulfing a busy street, picking up cars, minivans, sending people scrambling up the sides of buildings. A videotape broadcast by Metro TV, a commercial channel based in Jakarta, apparently shot by a cameraman who normally photographs weddings. But there he was. He captured a horrific record of the entire unfolding December 26 disaster, starting minutes after a giant sea earthquake in the Indian Ocean brought down buildings, including a scene hours later showing a long line of corpses covered with cloth. There are detailed photographs circulating on the Internet in which the corpses are not covered, and they were lying in... And it's some really awful stuff. I don't know if you've seen it. I hope not, in a way. U.S. troops opened fire near a checkpoint south of Baghdad after the convoy was hit by a roadside bomb, and a hospital official said on Sunday that at least 8 people were killed in the second American attack in 2 days to have deadly results. In other violence Sunday, a U.S. soldier assigned to the task force Baghdad was killed by a roadside bomb while a Marine was killed in action in the volatile Anbar province. Now, a little closer to home and very close to me, areas of the Sierra Nevada, famous for large amounts of snow, have really hit bingo. Nobody's ever quite seen anything like it. Steep drift, very steep drifts, stranding an Amtrak train, they're hard to stop. Knocked out the Reno airport, began shutting down major highways across the mountains. Storms have caused flooding in Southern California and Arizona, but what's going on in Reno? Again, Southern California, heavy rains and blizzards slammed California on Saturday, triggering floods, mudslides, tying up traffic from Southern California to San Francisco and into the Sierra Nevada mountain range. In fact, listen to this. This comes from Fred in Reno. In case you haven't been keeping up on Reno, oh my God. The Reno-Tahoe airport is closed since early afternoon. Says Fred, the end of life as we know it, or it seems exactly like the day after tomorrow. He says, indeed, it's one for the history books and one of the top snow producers in the entire last century. A strong storm adds big numbers to Friday's snowstorm totals, with a strong feed of tropical moisture. This is the gathering of the storms, folks. The movement of moisture from the Pacific and snowy pattern here continues with a bit of break on Sunday, says Fred. The winter storm warning has been extended to 4 a.m. on Tuesday by the National Weather Service. Also, strong wind gusts will bring dangerous whiteout conditions, and new layers of snow bring increasing avalanche dangers. It's the worst storm since 1911. Winds at the mountain crests at the Sierra up over 150 miles an hour. And they have just feet, well, he says we've got over 4 feet of snow in the last 24 hours in the North Valley. That's north of Reno by 7 miles. So there are people, I imagine, in the Reno area looking out their windows and seeing nothing but white. And I don't mean a white blanket. I mean white up at the windows. That kind of snow in. More in a moment. By the way, if you have something of intense interest to the audience, then you are welcome to call. The lines are open now, and we'll get to it shortly. Remember last night, somebody called and said that he had heard that well water in Virginia was sloshing around for several minutes following the Indonesian earthquake. Remember that? Well, here it is. This comes from the Times-Dispatch, Richmond, Virginia. Spawned by the South Asian earthquake, seismic waves roiling deep within the earth made Virginia well water rise and fall by 3 feet, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. So it's true. Strong oscillations at a 450-foot deep well near the Round Meadow Country Club in Christiansburg in western Virginia started about an hour after the magnitude 9 quake struck 9,600 miles away. Now, that's very nearly as far as you can go without beginning back again. In other words, the other side of the world. Seismic waves travel through the earth at, get this, did you know the figure? Do you know how fast they travel? 7,400 miles an hour. It took another 5 hours for the sloshing to settle out. That water's going up and down, up and down, up and down in that well. That's a quote from a groundwater specialist, David Nelms. He said the height of the oscillation came about 77 minutes after the powerful earthquake struck near Sumatra. The water level then rose about 2 feet, according to Nelms. Data indicate the water came at least within 4 inches of the surface, perhaps even spilling out. We saw it here. What's amazing to me is we saw it here. In about an hour, we were seeing something from the earthquake on the other side of the world. So that is, that's fairly amazing when you sit and think a little bit about it. The other side of the world. Just about as far as you can go without starting back again. Now here's a little weird news. Very weird news, actually. And you can go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, I believe, and see the map I'm about to describe and look at the area I'm about to talk about and decide if you think it's true or not. It comes from the India Daily. And the headline is, China and India both know about underground UFO bases in deep in the Himalayan border area and deep into the tectonic plates. Now, I'm going to have trouble with these names. It's Kanka is the low ridge pass in the Himalayas, the blue oval in the map that you can see on the website. It is in the disputed India-China border area. In the map, the red zone is, and again, you can see the map on our website, is the disputed area still under Chinese control. The Chinese-held northeastern part is known as Aksai Chin, and Indian Southwest is known as Light. This was where Indian and Chinese armies fought major wars in 1962. The area is one of the least access areas in the world, and by agreement, the two countries do not patrol that part of the border. According to many tourists, Buddhist monks, and local people in that area, Indian Army and Chinese military alike, maintain a line of control, but there is something much more serious happening in that particular area. According to a few locals, people on the Indian and the Chinese side, that's what makes it so interesting, this is where the UFOs are seen, brace yourself now, coming out of the ground. According to many, the UFO underground bases are in this region, and both the Indian and Chinese government know this very well. Recently, some Hindu pilgrims on their way to Mount Kailash, is it, in the Western Pass, came across strange lights in the sky. Local guides, while in the Chinese territory, told them that this was nothing new, and it is a normal phenomena from Khanga Pass area and the tense border between India and China. The strange lighted triangular, keyword, triangular silent crafts show up from underground and move almost vertically up. Some of the adventuresome pilgrims wanted to look into the site. They were first turned by the Chinese guard posts as they were refused entry from the Chinese side, and then they tried to approach the side from the Indian, the other way, the Indian side. The Indian Border Patrol also turned them back. Now, if you want to read this whole article, you're going to want to make it up to the website. So what have we here? We have a map of a disputed area between India and China, where both sides, the Indian and the Chinese side, have viewed these triangular craft coming out of the earth and rising vertically into the air. Now, what are we to make of that? That's pretty strange stuff, you've got to admit. I've got a lot more, but you know what? Let us go to the phones and see what awaits us. West of the Rockies, good morning. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Turn your radio off,
yes,
please.
It's off now.
Yes, good.
Yeah, Art, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing well.
Jamie from California calling you on 970 K News.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, last week NASA announced that they were going to go blow up an asteroid.
Ah, yes.
That we are going to be able to see it from Earth here, and that date was going to be on the 4th of July. Did you hear anything about that?
Well, I didn't hear that it would be July 4th. I'm well aware that we are going to smack into an asteroid at rather high speed for some sort of scientific purpose, but I wasn't aware it was on the 4th of July. I certainly wasn't aware that we'd be able to see it. But
yeah, they announced it on Sunday.
That would be way cool.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And it certainly might dwarf anything anybody else would do.
So, but that's it. I just wanted to know if you heard anything about it.
No, not with respect to the 4th of July. All right, thank you very much, sir.
It was going
to
be this year on 4th of July.
Got you. All right, thank you. I'll check into it. Is that indeed, folks, when it's going to be? I know we have plans to smack into one of those suckers. And then I also know we have plans to collect some stuff from behind one of these fast movers. I don't know if it's one of the icebergs or rocks, but we're going to collect the leavens and bring them back to Earth. And I've thought a lot about that. I'm not sure it's an altogether wise thing for us to do, but we're going to do it. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Hi.
Yes, hi, Art. I'm calling. I was wondering if you, I think you had a caller a few months ago talking about phone numbers, people dialing numbers, the dead talking to the live, I guess, via the phone.
Well, I don't know.
I recall hearing that on the XM radio, I think.
Uh-huh. That could, it could be.
It might have been George Norrie.
Could be.
But we had a situation where we had a number that was dialed to us. It was 111-111.
Yeah, I know. I've heard a lot of people have that one.
And
It was left on your caller ID.
Caller ID.
Yeah. I've had a number of people who have told me about that it came up all ones. And I have no idea what that is. And I also have no idea whether it's related to those who have received calls from the supposed dead. That would be in the category of EVP. Now, if somebody on the other side can actually dial a number, I am really impressed. The fact that they can get their voice modulated over some sort of tonal device is incredible enough. But to imagine they can actually dial, oh, that's over the top. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Well, I guess you're not. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, hello. I'm Charlie in Kauai.
Yeah, calling from Kauai, huh?
Yes.
Where I bet it's beautiful.
Oh, it always is.
Yes, well, that foul thing that's over us right now was said to be from Hawaii. I believe they called it the Pineapple Express.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a bad dispersion on this. I don't know if it comes all the way from
Yes, yes, it does, and many of us are very resentful.
Oh, dear.
Just want you to know that. As you enjoy the sunshine and the light trade winds,
uh-huh.
And here it's the day after tomorrow. All right, go ahead, sir.
Do you have your white noise generator ready?
No.
Oh, gee, I was going to make a demonstration. I've invented a chip which makes free energy by turning heat directly into electricity using white noise.
Your device, let's get this straight now. It turns heat into electricity, but the basis of it all is white noise.
Yeah, the white noise is the spectrum of thermal noise is over the full radio spectrum.
Well, I do have white noise here, sir, but I wouldn't want you to get burned.
Oh, okay, but it's very small. It's over the whole radio bandwidth. It's about a nanowatt's worth, but I'm thinking of integrating a chip with billions of diodes in parallel that would aggregate this.
Okay, the only problem is you need power to produce white noise.
No, the thermal noise is white noise, too. It's just not amplified white noise, but as the electrons move around inside of the electronic parts,
you need power to generate white noise. You say thermal noise.
Yeah, the energy comes from heat. It's one of the parts of heat. Just like if you have a liquid solution with small particles in it, they will move around at random, too.
Fascinating.
Electrons will do the same thing in a circuit, so you'll turn heat into electricity if you rectify them.
All right, well, if you get an opportunity, email me a copy of whatever it is you're doing, and if I can help you out, I'd be glad to. I don't understand the concept exactly of what you're doing, but interesting. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Turn your radio off, please.
That's
the first thing you should do. Yes, sir.
My grandpa, a few days ago, told me about, he was listening to your show a couple years ago.
Yes.
And you were talking about a hole in Siberia that they put the mic down.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of screams or something.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was wondering if you could play that.
You really want to hear that?
Yeah.
Do you realize that hearing such a thing could affect you for the rest of your life in perhaps some negative way?
Yeah.
And you still want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
Yes, sir.
All right. This, according to a Reuters news story, you've heard of the Reuters news service, right?
Yeah, I think I have.
Uh-huh. The Reuters news service wrote a story about this. Some scientists drilled what was said to be the deepest hole in the world ever drilled into the ground in Siberia. At some point, some of the scientists thought they heard something coming from one of the holes. Many people feel this is some sort of urban myth, but I'm telling you it was in Reuters. Anyway, I did obtain a recording of it some years ago of what they allegedly recorded when they lowered microphones, that is, into that hole. I am now going to play that for you, and it is said that after they played back what they captured, they all took off and ran just like what you're going to hear, hell. Ran like hell. Here you go.
That, sir, is the recording. There you have it. And so, how do you feel?
I really don't know.
Well,
that was interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot more than interesting. If I heard that, I'd get religion.
Yeah.
Have a good night, sir.
You too.
Tell you what, these drums do rock, don't they? Really awesome. The numbers are coming up, and I want you to pay very close attention because here on the weekend they're just a little bit different. Here they are.
Mail card line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Albeit a might mangled, those are the numbers. Good morning, everybody. It's open lines from now until the top of the hour. And then we're going to explore the world, the very deep world, actually, of biofeedback. Don't touch that dial! Well, all right, to the lines we go, and first time caller line, let us begin there. You are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Ron from San Diego.
How you doing, Ron?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Excellent.
Great, great. My question is not so, you know, paranormal or anything. I was just asking maybe if you could tell me who the artist was that the music with those drums came from.
The drums.
Yeah, it was your intro music or your exit music that you just had on. It sounded really neat. They had some, like, chanting and then the drums.
Drums. Something like that?
That is it.
All right. That would be a group called Cusco. C-U-S-C-O. And they do a lot of, South American-influenced music. Cusco. C-U-S-C-O.
Great. All right. Thank you so much.
So rock and get a copy. It's really something. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Top of the morning.
Good morning, Art. I'm wanting to report to you about the seismic activity in the Richmond, Virginia area, which is highly unusual.
Seismic activity in Richmond?
Yeah, the Science Museum sent me kind of background on it. We're in the middle of the state. We're not in the mountains. We have some hills.
Yes.
When you get to Charlottesville, that's more or less the foothills of Blue Ridge, and that's where they've had some earthquakes over the period since 1700s. So here we have in Richmond something in 1774, something in 100 years later, and always with a small magnitude. Actually, all of them are fairly small, 4.5.
Yeah.
Well, last year, at the first week of December, we had a 4.5 in this area, and then exactly almost to the day, a year later, we had a 2.5, I think it was. And then the north side of the city here, they have put in some seismic, recording devices, because they've had these booms. Now, no one knew what these booms were coming from. Now they think it's just underneath the ground, just a shaking kind of a small amount.
My dear lady, we have been experiencing the booms you're talking about out west here forever.
Well, when you put underground some of the seismic recording devices, you may find that it's underground, not detectable by the normal means.
There's something down there. There's something down there.
Yes, and indeed, and what's interesting about this area is that Gordon Michael Scallion, whom you know, who's been on your show a lot, when he was lecturing here in the 90s, he came down once, and he said that he determined by his psychic abilities that this area actually is going to, when the changes come, that it will be rising from Richmond onto an area of 50, 100 miles.
Well, let me stop you for a second. You mentioned Gordon Michael Scallion.
Yeah.
Were you aware that Gordon had predicted for a very long time a large event in the exact area where it occurred? Were you aware of that?
You mean in you're talking about the tsunami?
The Indonesian earthquake.
I did not know that.
Oh, he's been all over that for a long time.
Well, I don't know if that's part of the Ring of Fire, but
it is. It certainly is.
Yeah. Well, in this area, I thought it was hysterical that he would say that this area would rise because, you know, the Southerners have said, "Save your Confederate money; the South will rise again." And here it is, the Confederate capital. I thought it was hysterically funny.
Well, I don't think he meant in that metaphorical sense, though. I think what he meant was an actual physical up you go kind of deal. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
This is Steve. I'm calling from Central Texas and picking you up on KTRH tonight.
Yes, sir.
I got a quick question. Do you remember a movie called Mars Attacks?
Ah, yes, Mars Attacks.
Jack Nicholson?
Of course.
Do you remember?
In fact, I watched it again just recently.
I've got the DVD and I was watching it last night. Do you remember where the Martians land?
Well, of course. They land here in Pahrump. Yeah. And, moreover, Pahrump gets destroyed.
What I'm kind of curious about is, what kind of deal are you making with the Martians, Art?
I didn't make any deal with anybody. That was a certain director's sense of humor, who obviously listens to this program. And I thought it was hysterical.
It shows good taste.
Well, you'll recall that the theatrical Pahrump was nothing but a bunch of bleachers in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of the desert.
Yes. Well, the real Pahrump is now coming up on 40,000 population, sir. And people are moving here faster, damn near by percentage, than they are to Las Vegas. It's incredible what's going on here. So it wasn't that empty place you saw.
Well, have a good morning, and do me a favor.
Mm.
Destroy that tape.
Never. There could be certain dangers involved in the destruction of that tape. He refers, of course, to the tapes of the sound of hell, or whatever it is down there. It probably serves as a good reminder to, to be good. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Yes, extinguish your radio, please.
It's extinguished.
Good.
I'm running across Idaho, listening to you on XM Radio.
You're actually running across now. The weather's bad. Oh, you mean in a vehicle, right?
Yeah, in a truck. I'm trucking across Idaho. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's quite all right.
I'd be pretty tired if I was running in the cold.
I would think.
I have a question about, I heard these stories about an upcoming polar shift. Is that a physical polar shift or electromagnetic polar shift?
Well, your choice. Both stories are circulating. One would be a very mundane, you'd barely notice it, but the compass would be different kind of shift. And the other brings on 300-mile-an-hour winds and sort of wipes mankind off the face of the globe kind of deal. So, both.
Okay, so it, was that the basis behind your story and the movie Day After Tomorrow?
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. We all know the polar ice caps are melting, and let's focus on the northern polar ice cap. All that fresh water's got to go somewhere.
That's right.
Won't go out the Bering Strait.
Well, wait a minute. Let's be sure that we understand what we're talking about here. The ice in the north, sir, is already in the water.
Okay.
So we're not going to have a serious event as a result of the polar ice melting. You know, it's like ice cubes in a glass. They melt and the level remains the same. However, in the southern part of the world, in the Antarctic, if that, the Ross Ice Shelf, for example, if that goes into the water, so will many American seacoast cities.
Okay. Okay, up in the north, though, here's what I'm thinking. If that fresh water which is out there and all the ice melts basically in the north,
yes,
it'll go down towards the North Atlantic, which will block the Gulf Stream, which would push it further south, and then the northern polar ice cap would form over towards, say, Iceland and Scotland and Finland instead of where it is now geographically.
No. Again, visiting this just for the sake of discussion, the danger in the freshwater melt is not so much as you described as it is the fresh water diluting the salinity of the ocean, and then perhaps the North Atlantic or the Atlantic current halting. And should that occur, why Europe would very quickly freeze over, and North America to a lesser but still catastrophic extent would be affected. So it's not as though it's meaningless what's going on up there. It's still very dangerous. It's just that it will not account for sea level rise different in, or dangerous, rather, in a different way. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. I am humbled. Sean, I'm listening to you on XM in Colorado.
In Colorado, yes, sir.
Now, I don't know if you remember or ever heard a few months ago, Paul Harvey, and as far as I'm concerned, if Paul Harvey says it, it's gospel.
It's got to be true.
Did a story on a bouncer in London that got stabbed, and his blood was not human, and there was never any follow-up.
You're so right. I remember the story, and it's one of those where there's never any follow-up. I don't know what else to tell you. I remember the story when he told it. They tested it. It wasn't human, and you're right. There was no follow-up. And isn't that exactly what you would expect if the blood really wasn't human?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would do anything to hear. But I do want to make a comment about your tape.
Oh, the tape.
The Siberian thing.
Yes.
You know, I thought that was urban legend. It's on urbanlegend.com. But if it is faked, I really worry about the soul that made that.
Oh, that's a good point. Listen, again, that was a real... I made a very sure that it was a real Reuters story, and I think twice over the years I've posted the Reuters story on our website because eventually, like everything else, people don't believe it. It didn't come rolling out of some city as an urban legend. It was a real Reuters story. And I'm pretty sure it was Reuters. Anyway, twice over the years I've dug it up and posted it so that all could read it and know it was so. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I have a question. Do you remember the interview that you did with a gentleman by the name of Bugs down in Texas regarding Bigfoot?
Of course.
Are you going to have another Bigfoot show sometime?
Only if it is warranted. And by that I mean I don't do programs just to be doing them. For example, Bugs is a very good example. There was every reason in the world to do that program when we had Bugs. This is a man who shot a couple of these creatures, knew where they were buried. I mean, if you listen to that show, and I would recommend that everybody do so, objectively listening, you could tell this man was telling us the truth. This guy was scared to death.
Absolutely.
And so I took the time, and well, I think we made not just one, but actually two shows out of that, because it was so incredible. So if something like that comes along, sir, we'll rock and roll.
Sounds great.
Okay. Thank you very much. Not just to do it, but if there's a reason to do it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Just calling in to discuss the topic of cancer.
Where are you, sir?
Toronto.
And what did you want to say about cancer?
I do believe that there is more money to be made by chasing a cure instead of finding a cure, because if we do find a cure, then they will make these doctors and whoever researchers will make no money.
You've confused me. Let's start again. You think there is more money to be made by chasing a cure, you said?
Acting as if we're trying to find a cure. Because the longer we do not find the cure, the more money doctors can make, acting like as if they're getting a cure.
I see. So you think that perhaps the medical profession or, I don't know, some pharmaceutical company or something actually has a cure and they're suppressing it so they can keep making money. Is that it?
Yeah.
I got it. All right. Well, I don't subscribe to that. And I think that if there was a cure for cancer, the amount of money in that would be so astronomical. And there would be so much goodwill for those who had found it that indeed it would be out there. And I know this goes down in the category then of the the carburetor that runs on water, the machines that produce more output than they take in, being perpetual motion and giving us free energy, it puts it in that category. In a way, if you listen to that caller, I think as that caller does, but I don't. And I believe that if we had a cure for cancer, it would darn well be out there. Now, albeit somewhat expensive, but it would be out there. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. I wanted to correct the gentleman you had in the first half hour. It's not an asteroid, it's a comet.
Comet.
Yeah, Comet Temple 1. And I was wondering when your that special on ABC is going to be broadcast. Have they given you a date on that yet in February?
It's in February, I believe. It could be as late as March, but I believe it's going to be February. Last time I spoke to them, and that was about 3 weeks ago. So I'm really looking forward to it. And you'll see promotions about it till you're sick.
Oh, that's cool.
So you won't miss it.
Great, great. Well, keep up the good work. Oh, by the way, I'm prediction number 68 that those comet parts are coming down and starting the fires.
Ah, that's right. He made a prediction about us hitting a comet and then there being fires because of pieces and parts that come scorching their way into Earth. Yes, we did a special, which I thought was, in fact, it accounted for a ding with regard to the mainstream press. They came here, and Peter Jennings is doing a big special. Now, what ABC has told me is that this is going to be a not a chuckle piece. It's going to take a serious, hard look at ufology, and that's what they have promised. We'll see whether that's what they deliver or not, but it should be coming in February, perhaps March. But I think February, and you'll begin to see the promos for it when they decide on an air date. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, this is Chris.
Hello, Chris. Yes.
Yeah, just to comment on your voices that you played earlier and stuff like that. You got out of, where was it again, Siberia?
That's allegedly where it came from, yes.
Wasn't there like a website that was put up on that, like a few years back? I say about 3 or 4 years put back when that.
There have been many websites about it, sir. Some calling it a fraud, some saying it's real. You choose.
Which particular one did you get that information off of, or was that somebody else?
Oh no, this was sent to me by a source years ago that claimed that it, and there was some reason to believe that it was authentic. This was sent by an individual, sir.
Okay.
All right.
That's all I really wanted to know, Art. Will you take it easy and keep doing a good job?
Have a good morning or evening. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Pete from Detroit, listening on CKLW 800.
Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to talk to you about that Global Consciousness Project and some of the information that they've recovered over these a couple events recently.
Yes. I made sure, incidentally, a weekend ago, that the results from the 60-some-odd eggs with regard to the tsunami event were posted. I hope you saw them.
I did. And I tried to conceive of what would have registered on that system.
God, I don't know.
That was human or non-human.
Everybody should know that what we're referring to is this project at Princeton University to monitor the global consciousness pool through a series of eggs or computers scattered geographically around the world. And by God, once again, even after the 9/11 event, which began to spike before the event itself, 30 minutes ahead of the earthquake and tsunami, it began to rise way the hell up off scale at Princeton. And so they're beginning to build a record of, what would you call it, credibility in the area?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What if they're registering angelic and demonic activity prior to these major events?
Well, that would still be a pretty big story, wouldn't it?
In preparation to receive the souls of the departed.
Well, whatever it is. I mean, if it was that, that would be a gigantic story.
And this same activity could also be responsible for some of the unusual earthquake activity that we've seen. This stress, this power, this battle that's going on. Right,
sir, now. Anything could be, but anything that begins registering 30 minutes ahead of an event that otherwise is unpredictable, when you know the real story on it, it's going to be a big story, right?
Right.
Because it means that in some way there's time travel, precognition, something going on.
Angels? Demons?
Angels?
Something's going on.
Demons, if you wish, whatever.
Angel?
But, baby, it's going to be a big story. All right, yeah, I can tell you're biased toward the angel possibility, which is fine. One thing, as I said, though, for sure, is that whatever, as Paul would say, the rest of the story turns out to be, it's going to be a major, and it's going to just rock everybody's world. All right, coming up in a moment, we'll begin a different kind of adventure. From the high desert, the soggy high desert in the middle of the night. I'm Art Bell.
Code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
My pleasure to escort you through the weekend. Coming up now, Dr. James V. Hart. That's H-A-R-D-T, Hart. Serves as the president and founder of BioCybernaut Institute. That's right, BioCybernaut Institute, Inc. He holds a B.S. in physics from Carnegie Institute of Technology, an M.S. and Ph.D. in psychology from Carnegie Mellon University. He has done postdoctoral training in psychophysiology at the University of California in San Francisco. Dr. Hart has earned a national reputation as a preeminent research scientist for his over 30 years of work in biofeedback. He regularly presents at numerous prestigious national and international meetings and has published in leading scholarly journals such as Science, Psychophysiology, and the Journal of Experimental Psychology. In a moment, Dr. Hart. One has to admit the term or word biocybernaut is really fascinating, and we're about to ask Dr. Hart what it is. If I were to be asked what a biocybernaut was, do you remember that movie in which a number of medical people were shrunk along with their submarine, and then they were injected into the living human body that was ill, and they went coursing around the veins and vital organs of this person, fixing and dodging as they went? That seems to me it would be a bio-cybernaut. But we'll ask the man who really knows, Dr. Hart. Dr. Hart, welcome to the program.
Art, thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. So let me ask you, a bio-cybernaut, that's all I can think of. What's a bio-cybernaut?
Well, the easiest way to figure it is a bio-cybernaut is to inner space what an astronaut is to outer space.
Still sounds like what I was talking about.
Inner space being the inner space of the mind.
Oh, okay.
And naut is a Greek suffix,
yes,
that indicates going on an adventure.
Yes.
Astronauts, cosmonauts, Jason and the Argonauts. And it's also kind of a play on words. Norbert Wiener made up the science of cybernetics, science of automated control systems.
Yes.
And in this case, we're using computers interfaced intimately with the brain activity so that people can, in fact, go on voyages of discovery inside their own mind.
Let's backtrack a little bit to the computers interfacing with the human mind.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a scientist not very long ago who was going to have himself connected to a computer. I'm still not altogether sure how that came out, but to be sure, the first experiments in connecting human beings and computers have begun, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how much has been done?
Well, you can connect many different aspects of the human being. We're working with the brain activity.
Yes.
It turns out, for example, if you were to put your hand over your head in the back, and you could, without looking at it, bring together your thumb and each one of your fingers in turn.
Yes.
Because you have feedback.
Yes.
Your brain knows where your body is.
Uh-huh.
But the brain has almost no feedback about its own activity. It's kind of like a missing link, which we provide with our technology so that the brain can know what it's doing while it's doing it and thereby improve.
Improve in what sense? Higher IQ?
Yes.
Oh.
We produce, on average, about a 12-point boost in IQ.
Oh, my God.
With this training.
I'm glad I asked.
First week.
The first week?
Uh-huh.
Really?
And the creativity boost is about 50%.
Now I'm reminded of Planet X.
Yeah.
Do you ever see Planet X?
No.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not Planet X. It was Planet X, Forbidden Planet.
Oh, yes, Forbidden Planet.
Do you remember the knowledge of the Krell?
Yes, I do.
Well, this sounds a little like that.
Well, and you're prescient because you're almost giving me goosebumps on this.
Oh.
That was a movie from 1956, I believe.
Uh-huh.
It was the first big-budget science fiction movie.
It was a beaut.
And what happened there was this advanced race had hooked up to all the members of their race the ability to project matter and energy.
Yes.
They had a million years of shining sanity. And the night they did this, monsters from their ids emerged and went around and basically wiped each other out because they harbored negative emotions.
That means a monster from the inner self.
Right. Uh-huh. Exactly. As Freud came up with the terms, the id, the ego, and the superego.
Yes. The id got them.
The id got them.
Their own id got
them. In fact, your guest last night, Dr. Kaku, was talking about our being about 100 years away from becoming a Category 1 civilization.
Type 1, yes.
And we've got maybe a 50-50 chance of making it.
Well, I should warn you that in the past, he's given much poorer odds.
Yes.
I mean, 1 in a million or something. Something awful. So that was somewhat...
encouraging.
Hmm.
Well, this technology allows people to do the things to, in a sense... It produces a form of ethical cleansing because people do deep forgiveness work and they let go of sadness, anger, fear, and they move into joy as well as having more creativity, so they're more likely to use that creativity for the benefit of themselves and others.
So improvement that you might get from biofeedback, couldn't it be used negatively as well? I mean, to be honest here.
First of all, we're not talking about biofeedback per se. We're talking about a subcategory of it,
okay,
which is brainwave feedback, or the professionals call it neurofeedback.
Okay.
But could it be used negatively?
Well, yes.
If any experience that you have as a living human being, you have only because you have a certain pattern of brainwaves. And if you learn how to change that pattern, you will have different experiences. But the thing is, people prefer to move into happiness, joy, contentment, understanding, rather than moving into anger and fear and things like that. So if you give them a choice,
yes,
they're going to move toward the light.
I was told that was a trick.
Well, anyway, if you have a gun to someone's head, you can make them, you can perhaps compel them to learn brainwave patterns, which would be unpleasant.
All right.
If you've already got that kind of control over them, you don't need brainwave feedback.
A week, Professor, is a very short time. A week is a very short time. What can you do in a week that would actually boost somebody's IQ by 10 points? I really am curious.
Well, we give them about 90 to 95 hours of training in that week. The days are typically 12 to 14 hours a day.
Huh.
And some of the time is spent in soundproof chambers, listening to a surround sound musical environment where the musical sounds are driven by brain activity at different places on the head.
Sounds pleasant so far.
Oh, yes. At two-minute intervals, the sounds stop, and you open your eyes and see scores that light up on the screen that tell you how much energy your brain put out at different locations.
Really?
And they're coded by color. So if you've set a new high for the day, that score will be green.
It's
so
measuring...
You don't have to remember the numbers.
All right, now it's measuring your brain's energy?
Energy, yes. Actually, it's the square root of energy. It's the amplitude, but, yeah, it relates directly to energy.
What are you actually measuring?
The alpha waves.
The alpha waves. Yeah. Okay, so...
And they were the first brain waves discovered. They were discovered by Hans Berger, an Austrian psychiatrist, in 1908. The reason he went looking for them, he'd been involved as a soldier in some war, and his horse fell on him, he almost died. And his sister, back in Austria, knew instantly all the details of what had happened to him. So when he got home, I think she had this all written down, all of a sudden he realized that there is something to ESP. He went looking for it. But using the primitive technology of the day, all he could discover were the biggest brainwaves, alpha. That's why he called them alpha. They were the first ones found. They're neither the fastest nor the slowest, but they're usually the biggest. And he kept it a secret for 10 years because he thought it was the basis of ESP, and he restudied it and researched it.
No kidding. No
finally
kidding.
Published in 1918.
Okay, alpha wave. So you give a person during this feedback so that they know when they're in an alpha wave state?
Yes.
Is that what it is about? And so when you know you're in an alpha wave state, you identify what you're feeling and doing to be there, and you then do it more frequently, and you're able to build the power or the amount of alpha waves.
Yes, exactly right. And okay. Those alpha waves correlate, depending on where on the head they increase, with reductions of psychopathology, in other words, anxiety, paranoia, depression, schizophrenia, all of these negative personality traits. Each one of them can be reduced by learning a pattern of alpha increases, you know, with a different set of sites on the head. It's like a map.
Doctor, wouldn't that suggest that there would then perhaps be treatment for some psychological disorders with this?
Absolutely.
Yes.
In 78, I published a paper in Science which demonstrated that you could take people at the extreme high end of anxiety,
yes,
give them alpha feedback training,
yes,
and they could end up below average in anxiety.
My goodness.
This was thought to be...
And that was published in Science.
In Science magazine, yeah.
And
7778.
And this was what you just described, was that the way you did it?
The technology has continuously improved.
But then, is it the way you did it?
Yes, by teaching people to increase their alpha brainwaves. Now, to do this really quickly, we embed the feedback in another process, which involves depth interviews. People interact with a computerized mood scale program, which asks them to describe both before and after their feedback training, how they feel in relationship to hundreds of adjectives. They're wired up while they're doing this,
right?
And the computer can tell that if they give an answer, which they might think is true, let me tell you a story. We had a CEO of a $1 billion corporation in the training.
Huh.
He was in the training with four people, and on the end of the first day, when they came out of the chamber, the first thing they do is they tell their stories, they get interviewed, they get some coaching,
sure.
And then we go and review their mood skills. Well, when I opened his mood scales, I saw that the top of the list, the word was angry. And his answer was zero. He put zero on angry. But the computer wasn't buying that. And it expressed its doubt in terms of number of sigmas. One sigma is a 68% chance a person's answer is wrong. Two sigmas, 95%. Three sigmas, 99.5%. This guy had five sigmas.
Five?
Five sigmas.
So he was lying through his billion-dollar teeth.
Yeah, but not consciously. Because in his conscious mind, he was not angry. Okay, so because he didn't think he was angry, he couldn't do any work to fix it. So I ask him, I give him this explanation, you know, the computer can detect emotions that exist within you below the level of your conscious awareness.
So wait, let me jump ahead. So angry was a normal state for him?
But not one that he was consciously aware of.
Nevertheless.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I said, you know, the computer can detect emotions below the level of your conscious awareness. And then I asked, is there anything that you're angry about?
Yes.
And he loudly and angrily yelled, no! So, of course, you know.
Tell him, no, I'm not angry. Get out of my face.
Exactly.
I feel great.
The training is gentle. It's non-confrontational. It startled everybody in the room the way he yelled it. It was so loud and so angry.
Yes.
But I started praising women's intuition. He was married, and I was going to ask the question, what would your wife say if we asked her if there was anything that you're angry about? Well, he's a bright guy, and he figured out where I was going, and even before I got to ask the question, he again loudly and angrily yelled no.
No,
and so we very quickly went through his mood scales because every single item where the computer, you know, had a disagreement with his answer, the answer was no. So, okay, we put him aside. We go to the next person. There are three people in the training.
Yes.
Okay, now we get to maybe the first or the second item, and the person will pause and sniffle a little, and a tear will come out of their eye.
Oh, really?
And I'll say, okay, well, what's the story behind that? It's something that they had denied, but it was in them. The computer detected it, and when you ask them about it, they can bring it up, talk about it. It's cathartic. It's very healing. And at the end of the day, he could see that every one of the other three people had grown by dealing with this stuff. Okay, so day two, he comes in. Now, he opens his vest from his three-piece suit, and he takes out and unfolds a long list. It's everything that he's angry about. Now, in psychotherapy, this might be year 20, or if you have a good patient, a good therapist, maybe year 2, he's in touch with his issues now.
Yes.
So here's what we tell him to do. Go into the chamber, get your alpha going, and then bring to mind somebody from your angry list. Okay, he does this. And when he does, he gets angry, which means his alpha drops. It gets quiet in there. The scores go down. And he's going, well, what's wrong? What's happening here? And he goes, what'd they tell me to do? Forgiveness. Forgiveness? I'm not going to forgive that son of a gun. He gets really angry. Tones get really quiet. And the scores go down to double digits. I mean, they were triple or four-digit numbers.
But yes, people just cannot think logically when they're angry. It is an emotion that's like a red blanket in front of a bull. You know, they lose all reasoning power.
They live in their ego. And so then, but you see, CEOs of billion-dollar companies don't want the numbers to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So he's caught between his justified anger and the fact that he's failing. So he goes, okay, and he angrily then tries to do forgiveness. Well, guess what? That doesn't work. So then he goes reluctantly trying to forgive, and that too doesn't work. So then he's sitting there in the muddle just trying things, and all of a sudden he hears a tone, deedle, 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 and he goes, what was that? And then he realizes that during those 2 seconds where the tones came up, he was thinking about that guy he was angry about in a different way. So then he thinks about that guy in that way for the next two-minute epic, and all his scores light up green, meaning he set a new high for the day. So now he's like Superman. He has discovered his personal method of forgiveness.
Oh, that is very interesting.
And then he goes through all the items in his list, and he gets clear. That's why we call this ethical cleansing.
And then he gets clear. That sounds like a certain religion I know of.
Well, no, I'm sorry, it's not a religion.
okay, so what's happening? What is the process here? Why would you get these deep emotional remembrances and clearings? And I mean, this sounds like a psychologist's dream. Just build this into the dream couch, you know?
And this is why, well, at one point when I was a grad student doing research for my dissertation, I recruited a bunch of students from San Francisco State and selected the most 10% disturbed and the least 10% disturbed. And then I trained them, and then I gave them, you know, MMPIs, which is the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, and other personality tests. I had these scored, the before and after,
yes.
And I took them to Maureen O'Sullivan, who was a clinical psychologist working with patients on the locked wards at Langley Porter, part of UCSF. And she could not believe it. She was astonished. She said, what did you do to these people? I've never seen people so disturbed look so healthy afterwards. What are you doing?
And I'm sure you explained.
I did. Brought her down to the lab, showed her the technology.
So what is it? What is the process? I mean, what's happening here to trigger this in
people?
Well,
the mood scales are a key part of it. The neurofeedback is where you do your deep work. But the mood scales, in a sense, identify where you're stuck. Because if you don't know you have a problem, you can't fix it. I think British Prime Minister Disraeli said, to be aware that there is a problem is 90% of the way to the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mood scales identify where people are stuck in their emotions, whether it's sadness, anger, fear, whatever. And then I give them coaching on how to work with whatever the problem is that gets turned up. And then they take that into the chamber, and they do the work, and they come out, and they are literally transformed.
What if you took the chairman of a multi-billion-dollar corporation, immensely successful, and you changed him, Dr. Hart, so that even though he felt jolly and well and relieved and God had entered his life or whatever other wonderful thing happened as a result of all of this, and then he went back and failed miserably as a CEO. In other words, whatever fire had been in this man, call it anger, had been the reason for his success, and you just sucked it right out of him.
Well, first of all, we don't suck anything out or put anything into people. It's something that they do themselves.
Okay, fine.
You can sit in the chamber all week and not participate in pretty much nothing.
Yeah, happens. But that being said, yeah, that could still perhaps happen. And anyway, hold on. Listen, we're at a break point.
Okay.
Hold on, Dr. Hart. I mean, isn't there a certain A-type personality with an incredible drive who just wants to go out and do nothing but make money? What if that left him?
I know he made this way. I can't
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Yes, what if this process, whatever it would be, sucked the, I don't know, the mean chief executive officer who had thought nothing about sucking up little companies and totally devastating them for his personal and corporate profit, and he could no longer do that. Because he thought about the men and women who were working in this little company and couldn't stand affecting their lives. Well, he'd be a better guy, but that company, oh, she's going under. Once again, Dr. James Hart. And, Dr. Hart, before we return to our CEO, because I do want to ask you about that again, Laura in Hell's Canyon, Washington, there's a name for you, says, "Hey, Art, you know, the techniques your guest is describing are almost exactly like those of Scientology." That was my little religious reference.
I know.
A galvanic skin response meter hooked up to talk out a patient's hot button, and then they home in and grind off that button by harping on it until, in quotes, clear. And that was the word you used.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much like that, isn't it?
Well, you could say that both a tricycle and a Ferrari are both transportation vehicles. In that sense, they're similar, but they're very, very different. In Scientology, the auditor receives the feedback and basically withholds it from the person. He's sort of a middleman.
Yes.
In brainwave feedback, the person in the chamber, it's just them looking at them. There's no one in between them and their feedback interpreting what's happening. They're directly interacting with their own brain.
All right. And a number of people have already apparently been to your website and are asking about the $15,000 price tag to go through it. To go through this procedure. That seems like a lot to them.
It's about $165 an hour.
Uh-huh.
And I've checked here in the Bay Area, there are many professionals that charge $100 per half hour for brainwave feedback training. And you don't see them getting the kinds of results that we do, including the mystical experiences, because they don't have their people there for 10 to 14 hours a day, seven consecutive days.
All right.
Like an airplane taking off on a runway. The only way you're going to take off is to taxi continuously.
Yes.
If you taxied 100 feet and stopped and came back 3 days later, and taxied another 100 feet and so on, eventually you'd reach the runway, but this transformation we call flight wouldn't have happened.
So all right.
The protocol that is with mass practice instead of distributed practice.
All right. The main goal of this would vary then by individual, is that correct?
Yes.
What sort of expectation would most people have, or would it be as different as the people? I'm trying to get to why would I go through this kind of answer from you?
Well, one could be curiosity. Another could be an interest in some kind of change in your life. For example, one time we had a famous author. He had written 16 books, achieved international acclaim.
Yes.
And he came in really sort of out of curiosity. But he'd been for 2.5 years in writer's block. He was unable to produce his 17th book. Mm. And when, on the end of the first day, when we looked at his brainwaves, the back of the left side of his head, which would, in a right-handed person, it would be the second biggest of all the energy of all the channels on the brain. It was a distant last. Well, that's a channel that's associated with verbal creativity. And so I said to him, I can see why you're in writer's block, because this channel, your left occipital, is so low.
And if you could bring that up, you're likely to get through your writer's block. So he worked on it. Second day it came up. Third day, it went up enormously, and we saw movement on the polygraph traces, her talking in the chamber over the intercom, mm-hmm. called in, are you okay? Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm fine. The muse of all writers had appeared to him and was downloading to him the complete plot, character development, everything of this novel that he'd been struggling, unable to write, and he had a pocket tape recorder, and he was whipping it out and talking into the tape recorder, everything that he'd gotten, he'd turn the tape recorder off, go back into Alpha, get another download of the story.
You're serious?
I'm serious.
That's incredible.
Famous author.
Uh-huh. That is incredible. I'll give you that. So it really did achieve that. Have you ever wondered whether what you're doing is a placebo effect? I mean, that's got to be considered.
Yeah, well, at one point we did a federal grant.
Oh?
We had a $250,000 federal grant.
Oh, no kidding.
National Institute of Mental Health.
So you did a double blind?
Double blind, absolutely.
Yes.
And one of the interesting things about that grant, it was working with the elderly, people from 60 up into their 80s. And the title of the grant was Anxiety and Aging, Intervention with EEG Alpha Feedback. Anxiety goes up with age, and everyone goes up faster in women. So we chose women over 60 as the most difficult ones maybe to work with this technology. Not only did their anxiety go away, but it was as though they had found the fountain of youth. There were ladies in their mid-70s who were going to college, getting degrees, starting businesses, starting new relationships. Alpha waves drop out as people age. There is a brain aging. And when alpha is gone, people pretty much enter senescence or senility. And with this training, you can learn to bring the alpha back, and you can restore your brain to a more youthful state where you have drive, psychic drive, intellectual function. The brain regulates the body better.
This is a very large claim you're making about this, a gigantic claim.
Yeah.
And I guess how is it backed up scientifically, other than anecdotal evidence? Or
well, you can go to the website, for example,
cybernaut.com. But in words, if I were to ask you that, well, I am asking you that question.
Yeah.
It's a gigantic claim, indeed. So how do you
look at the before and after brainwaves? You can take somebody who has...
That's good.
You know, you don't need statistics if you see a big enough change. But, of course, we have done statistics on this. And we even know, in a sense, why it happens. The alpha waves in the brain are dependent on blood flow.
Okay.
And as people get older, their blood vessels become constricted,
yes.
Inelastic, and clogged.
Yes.
And so, when one study done in 1953 by Rothenberg, Corday, and Putnam, they took monkeys and clamped one of the carotid arteries, shutting off blood flow to that hemisphere.
Yes.
Except for the circle of Willis, there's very little blood flow exchange between the two hemispheres. And the alpha waves in the hemisphere that was clamped went away. They were replaced by the senile brainwave pattern of mixed theta and beta waves. When they unclamped, blood flow returned, mm-hmm. The alpha waves came back. And so one of the things that
people... They were simulating senility,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we can unsimulate it, or we can reverse it by teaching people how to increase their alpha brainwaves.
How does that get more blood to the brain?
Well, do you know about hand temperature biofeedback? Where people learn to warm their hands?
Tell me about it.
Well,
I have cold hands.
Okay, well,
very cold hands.
If someone were to place a temperature probe on your finger and turn it into a beep or numbers flashing on the screen,
right.
You could try different images and see what would warm your hands. Now, what you're learning is how to dilate the blood vessels that feed your fingers.
In other words, your brain doing above and beyond its normal regulation and actually causing more blood to flow to your hands?
Yep. In fact, sometimes we even get what we call an alpha tan. When the brain figures out how to increase the blood flow, it kind of like gets so excited that it'll increase blood flow not only to the brain but to the face, and people come out of the chamber, they look like they spent a week in Bermuda.
This really is very interesting. Do you document it? See, I keep coming back to that. It's so incredible.
Mm-hmm.
How do you document this?
Well,
you
said,
do it with brain. Okay.
Double-blind study.
Right,
done,
and the brain.
Done $250,000 federal grant. And, we work with patients. At one point, we worked with a retired general who was 88,
Right.
And his 87-year-old girlfriend. Now,
yes.
On the fifth day, when they came out of the chamber, they were so, shall we say, euthumed, that they joined hands, danced around in a circle, and he wanted to throw her over his shoulder and run up and down the stairs.
I hope
said,
you stop
Henry,
them.
I don't think our insurance will cover this. Please wait till you get home.
Well, holy mackerel. I guess that's all I can say. And now you're also claiming, are you not, that people have certain experiences sometimes, as in seeing entities, what they might regard as angels, or these kinds of experiences.
There's a brainwave pattern for perceiving what we would generically call astral plane beings. Most people would describe them as angels. And I can give you one interesting example, because there's a complex pattern that relates to this. One time we had a San Francisco 49er in training, and he was...
Really? What was he trying to accomplish?
He was exploring. I wouldn't want to go into too much detail.
Yeah, okay.
But he went through 5 days with alpha dominance at the back of his head, which is a typical pattern, and on the fifth day, changed so that it was central dominance, and in order to see astral plane beings, centrals need to be higher than occipitals, and they both need to be above certain ranges in terms of the energy. He produced that pattern, and he held it for about 20 minutes. And I said to my technician, when he comes out of the chamber, he's going to have quite a story. Well, when he came out of the chamber, I can't say he was white as a sheet because he was a big black guy, but he was the most shaken I had ever seen him. And it took about a half an hour of coaxing before I could assure him that it was okay to talk about what he had seen, and he had seen three angels in the chamber. Transformed his life.
Three angels.
Another story was we worked with U.S. Army Green Berets, and we installed the technology on a secret base, and I took a portable unit, and I gave all of the... We did two 12-man teams of Green Berets, and we did baselines on them. They were going to go and do a month-long meditation retreat before doing their training, but, of course, because retreat's a bad word in the military, it was called... a meditation encampment.
Really?
Yeah. So,
that
so I gave
like the military.
Yeah, I gave each of them a baseline, measured them, eyes open, eyes closed, listening to white noise, counting beeps, and then they came back one at a time for an interview. And in one of the guys, one out of the 24, I saw a pattern that I recognized as being the pattern where you would see angels or astral plane beings. Now, this guy sitting across the desk from me, his head is shaved, bulging muscles, you know, he's being trained as a Green Beret. He's a warrior in every sense of the word. And I looked at him and I go, you know, am I going to tell this guy about this? And I stand on the technology. And so I said to him in a calm voice, do you talk to beings that other people don't see? And it was like I'd hit him with a 2x4. He almost fell over backwards in his chair.
Really?
His breathing accelerated. He's like flushed. He's looking around like, is there anyone else listening? We were alone in the room. And then he leaned forward, and in a hushed voice, he said, well, yes, Dr. Hart, I do. When I'm doing my martial arts training, there's this old kung fu master that shows up and coaches me. And I've only told my best buddy on pain of death if he told anybody about this.
No kidding.
And I could read it in the brainwaves.
Whew. This is really heady stuff, indeed. Do you have any... Science has... I believe, identified a part of the brain that might be active when people are having these sorts of experiences in seeing something or perhaps even OBEs. There have been a few studies, I believe, and there's all sorts of very interesting brain activity going on when those things happen. That's what you found?
Yes, and this helps to resolve the centuries-old conflict between science and religion.
Well, I'm not sure it resolves anything.
Well, it certainly...
There are scientists who claim, look, we can make people have NDEs. Mm-hmm. We can stimulate a certain part of the brain and create an NDE. So I'm not sure what we're proving here, Doctor. Are you?
Well, no. It's a good question. But what I'm pleased to say is that it takes away some of the heat in the discussions between science and religion and replaces it with understanding and with love and with data.
I'm not sure it resolves the big question at all.
No.
You know, does it? The big question is there really something after death?
Right.
Are angels really an entity, or is all of this the product of a living or nearly living human brain?
Mm-hmm.
And to what, how would you answer that?
Well, I'd say one of the best ways is to do some exploration, whether you do that through prayer or meditation. Personal experience is the way in my view. And it's great to read and to, you know, hear stories about other people having profound spiritual or religious experiences. But I think the most important thing is for you to have the experiences yourself, because that way you go from believing into knowing, having a direct personal experience of the divine, which is the kind of thing that saints in both Christianity and yogis and Zen will speak about.
Hey. Doctor, I had one very brief, unexpected, uncalled for OBE. It was spectacular.
Tell me about it.
Well, I was in Paris, France, with my wife. Very romantic. And it happened in the hotel room in Paris. And I, all of a sudden, in one undefinable amount of time, just instantly was up above Paris, way up above Paris, and I had the most joyful, wonderful, indescribable experience, and then, bam, I was right back in my body. Only time it's ever happened. But it was incredible. But still, doctor, I can't sit here and say that that makes me understand that there is life after death, that what I had was not a gift given to me by, I don't know, luck, where I was, my state of being at the time, whatever, but a product of my complex human brain.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing guaranteeing a life outside of
I would agree, based on that.
You know, when the blood flow stops to the brain, then that kind of thing may stop too, for all I know.
Would you like to have that experience again?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, if we could measure the brainwaves when you were doing it, you would get the pattern, and then you could train to reproduce that pattern. And what I've recognized is that there are, because that experience is actually fairly common for people doing this training. More than 10, maybe 15% of the people will have that in their first week. And it's associated with very high health activity.
Wow.
Any experience you have only because you have a certain pattern of brainwaves. And if you don't have those pattern of brainwaves, you're not going to have those experiences. If you can learn to have those patterns, then you can have those experiences.
So that could be your goal. And the goal you have when you go into this is purely up to you, or is out of your hands?
Well, you know, we talk in terms of the higher self. Because you might have one agenda.
And my higher self might have another.
Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you a story.
But see, that gets us back to the CEO.
It does.
My question really was quite valid. I mean, you might turn him into an entirely different individual who subjectively might be a better individual, a better human being, but not worth a damn as a CEO anymore.
Well, that's an important thing, and I'm glad you returned to it.
Okay.
Because our experience has been that businessmen and women typically say that in the year after their training, they've had the most successful year of their life in their business and in their personal relationships. In fact, you can go to the website, cybernaut.com, and there are testimonials there from businessmen and businesswomen saying exactly this thing.
Well, if the success of your business, doctor, depends on the ruthlessness with which you conduct your business...
That's a category or a stage zero civilization. You and I both move to a stage
but
one.
We live here in zero. Much as we're looking forward to the possibility of becoming a one, the fact is we are a zero. Listen, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. And this is fascinating. It will continue in a moment. I'm Art Bell.
got this dream about buying some land. He's gonna give up the booze and the one night stands, and then he'll settle down in some quiet little town and forget about everything. But you know he'll always keep moving. You know he's never gonna stop moving.
With Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Dr. James Hart is my guest, and I guess I bite. It seems like there's a lot of really good science behind this, so I guess I bite. There really is something to his work, maybe even a big something. It certainly is interesting. The results you've heard are fascinating so far. But still, I still wonder about that CEO. Ladies and gentlemen, all the knowledge of the Krell can be yours. Once again, Dr. James Hart. Before we move on, let's stay with our CEO. And I was saying, look, what if his success in business had been based on his ruthlessness, his willingness to destroy others in his path to success? Now, how about that?
Well, you and I both would wish that we could move to a state one culture rather faster than the 100 years that we heard as, you know, what we're looking at. Now, one of the themes is sustainability. And that you could do business as a robber baron, slashing and burning, you know, destroying people and lives as you go.
Yeah.
But there are better ways to do business.
Yeah, well,
and the ways that can actually make more money by you make your competitors into your allies, and you establish productive relationships with them. Now, this isn't to say that people who have a slash-and-burn mentality may, in fact, be shoved out of business by people who operate with compassion and understanding and taking care of the customer and ethical relationships in business?
I'm not saying that it can't be done ethically. Yes. My question is very narrow. It regards our CEO, who's ruthless. And
well, let's ask about that guy. Okay. That guy, in fact, came back many times and offered free advice to us. He loved what we were doing so much.
Gave you stock tips.
He was coaching us more on how to run the business.
Yes.
For example, he was saying, for a marketing person, you need to find somebody who successfully marketed an intangible. Then you need to find somebody who has done that and build an organization of people who could successfully market an intangible. So he was willing to provide us with knowledge about what to look for.
Hmm.
And in fact, we're looking for such a person to help us with marketing. I might add parenthetically that our building was sold on Monday, and we're also looking for a new building to move in.
They sold your building out from under you.
It's a historical building where William Shockley invented the silicon transistor.
I see.
Launching the third great wave of cultural revolution, the information processing age.
Yes.
And we're a fourth wave company, which is consciousness processing. So we had 7 years in the building, and now we have to move. So if any of your listeners know of a building for lease or for sale in the Bay Area, I'd love to hear about it.
I see. Well, they're very expensive in the Bay Area. I think expensive real estate up there. All right. I want to know a little more about the process. Earlier I heard you say white noise and beeps, and you went, sort of went right past that.
Oh,
but,
sure.
I have a feeling it has to do with the process. In other words, the person's brain is being monitored, and then I would guess that there's a baseline established that represents
white noise, yeah.
That is represented by the white noise, and then there are beeps when that baseline is exceeded by some certain amount. As the person sits there and tries to reproduce that again and again, that's biofeedback, right?
Pretty close, except the white noise happens before they get to the feedback. The feedback consists of, if you make alpha, you hear musical instruments, flutes, oboes, organ music. If the alpha gets bigger, the music gets louder. Each one of the sites on your head runs a note of a different pitch.
And during no alpha activity whatsoever, what is the feedback?
If there's no alpha, then there's no feedback.
No feedback at all, just dead silence?
Yeah. Well, there's what we call a resting level of the tones, because if it went from total quiet to sound, it would startle people, so when it drops down, there's kind of like a resting level.
That's what I was after.
Yeah.
So this is absolutely, the whole thing is verifiable by the person undergoing it.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so you will attain at least 10 points of IQ, and that can be tested and verified.
The average is almost 12. And let me tell you a little
12,
about what
really?
That means.
12.
Almost 12. And the IQ test that we use, the Kaufman Adolescent and Adult Intelligence Test,
yes,
has two dimensions, one corresponding to verbal, the other to mathematical. Now, in the verbal, most of the items were vocabulary-based, like word A is to word B, as word C is to, and then you have a choice. If you don't know any of those words, if it's not in your vocabulary, it doesn't matter how smart you are, you can't fill out, you can't complete that test. But on the verbal test, there were two things of how well you can communicate.
Mm-hmm.
We would play tapes of like little news stories, and immediately after, then we would ask the people questions, about what was said in the news story. And then 3 hours later, we would ask other questions, which hadn't been asked, but where the answers were in those stories. And so those measure auditory recall and delayed auditory recall.
Mm-hmm.
And those two abilities were so profoundly enhanced by this alpha training that it brought the whole dimension of crystallized IQ into statistical significance.
All right. In what physiological way is this occurring? Is this process actually causing more blood to flow to the brain, more oxygen to the brain, more of the brain becoming active? Is that what's happening?
That's certainly one of the things that's happening. As alpha increases, you get more blood flow to the brain, more oxygen to the brain. The brain works better, can run the body better.
Arguably, you have put these folks into an altered state. Is that fair?
They put themselves into sometimes very profound altered state.
Okay. Well, whether they do it themselves, the process initiates that. Is that correct?
Yes,
it would
exactly.
be fair to say an altered state? Well, what about, there are various ways of obtaining altered states. And let's see, David in Texas wants to know if psychedelic drugs, to your mind, are a legitimate secondary path.
Well, they're certainly illegal in this country.
But
so
that wasn't the question. Don't worry about that.
I would not recommend that.
Yeah, understood.
And David, let me speak to that directly, because frequently people who have done psychedelics will come in, do this training, and along about day five they'll come out of the chamber, and they'll say, man, that was better than my best acid trip.
Huh.
We had one guy who had done 20 years of TM meditation.
Okay, but that's kind of a nice answer, but it's still not a direct answer. And
is it a legitimate path?
Yes, that's right.
Well, Ram Dass asked that one time of his guru about LSD. He said, well, it's not the true samadhi. But the guru said to Ram Dass, it could be useful for some people in some times in some places. But in point of fact, it's much better if you can learn to produce the brainwaves of that yourself, because then you have access to it whenever you want.
Got it, but that still was a yes, wasn't it?
In what way?
A legitimate path.
Well,
come on now. If it is, say so.
I think that it has more problems than it has, good aspects.
Hmm.
For example, if you give somebody rice with, sand in it, rice is nutritious, but, let's do without this sand.
That's still a yes. That's a yes with, not the best way maybe, but still a way. I mean, unless I'm hearing you incorrectly.
Well, I think it would be better for people not to use illegal drugs.
Okay, all right. All right, that's as close as we're going to get, so let's move on. Scott in Austin, Texas, a lot of Texas this morning, says, please ask the doctor to get to the point, reach the increased alpha wave state that allows you to achieve these astral images that he was talking about. In what way does that differ from what we've been discussing? Is there some specific answer you can give him? Better yet, can this be done by individuals at home?
Good question.
Huh.
We have found that the training really only works if you do the first week with a skilled trainer and with a protocol, which is optimized. If you're going to do it at home, what if the phone rings or somebody comes to the door or you get an urge to go to the refrigerator? If you do it under guidance, you're going to optimize your results. Then a portable unit could help you to sustain and maybe even take the results further. But the initial training, we believe, needs to be done with a guide.
Out of curiosity, how many people who take your course end up buying or obtaining a machine themselves?
Well, we don't presently have a portable unit. When we did the federal grant, which we're, there were ladies living on Social Security, we actually paid them to go through the training, we surveyed them a year later, and we asked them, if a portable unit were available for $1,000, would you buy one?
Yes.
And 80% said yes. So this is something that ladies from 60 to 80 years old, non-technological ladies on Social Security, valued so much that they would, if it were available, they would have spent $1,000 on it.
Then that begs the question, after the week that you would spend with somebody, mm-hmm. would they benefit from having the machine themselves and continuing the process at home? How much benefit would there be?
I believe there would be a lot of benefit, and there is also benefit even if they don't do anything. In the federal grant, remember I said it was double blind.
Yes.
We couldn't tell them for a year what was going on, but we did bring them back at 6 months and at 12 months for a follow-up. We found that they were improved at 6 months beyond where they were mm-hmm. in the week immediately after training in terms of, personality profiles had improved. And at 12 months, they were further improved.
What do you believe the government's motivation was in providing money for this study?
Well, it was National Institute of Mental Health to achieve knowledge, to find out how to assist the elderly with the problems of anxiety.
It was elderly specifically, or was it mentally ill patients?
Oh, no. These were ordinary women living, independently. I recruited them at senior citizen centers.
So it was just an anxiety study for the elderly.
Anxiety and aging, that's what we were looking at. We wanted to be able to reverse aging. I'd seen a lot of things in the library that suggested that if we could increase alpha waves in the elderly, we could restore them to youthful experiences, youthful behaviors, youthful motivation, youthful intellectual function. That turned out to be true.
So there's no actual physical proof of regression, is there? And when you say youthful, you mean entirely mentally, right?
Yeah. Well, for example, on the website.
I was going to ask, were there physical manifestations?
Oh, well, all of the elderly women came in with somewhat elevated blood pressure. When their alpha went up, their blood pressure went down. So there were physical manifestations. And also, the brain is the master regulator. It regulates the digestion, the hormones, the endocrine system. And if it's not getting enough blood and oxygen, glucose and oxygen, it's not going to do its job properly. And the body's going to begin to malfunction, fall apart. If you can restore the blood flow to the brain is going to re-regulate the body. So a lot of physical problems that are related to aging will begin to reverse.
Well, surely the brain is important. For example, I decided that I was going to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. It's just that simple. I said, I'm taking this off. And I did. Mm-hmm. It was like magic. And then I said, okay, enough. And then that's where I stabilized. So your brain can do these things. How much more capability do you think our brains have than we have yet discovered?
I don't think we've begun to tap into the power of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Remember, stay good and close to the phone for me. You think that, that, for example, some of the experiences like out of body and seeing these, I don't know what we call them. We don't know angels.
We know what the brainwave patterns of halos are.
I beg your pardon?
You know what a halo is.
Well, I know.
A circle of light over the head.
Yeah.
We know what the brainwave pattern is that produces that.
Slow down.
It's trainable.
Well, hold on. Wait a minute. Halos are a sort of mythical thing.
Yeah.
Or are you telling me halos are real? That some people have. I mean, I only thought halos were in cartoons, Doctor.
Yeah, I understand. But they exist in Christian culture. They exist in Hindu culture. They exist in Buddhist culture. It's a sort of a universal symbol of goodness and purity. And it turns out that there is a complex brainwave pattern that we first saw in a Zen master and one of his advanced students, which if you talk to any electrical engineer, we're talking like a real hard-nosed, maybe atheist, if I were to show an electrical engineer atheist this brainwave pattern, he would say, oh, well, in phase space, over the head, there would be a torus. You know what a torus is? It's like a donut.
Yes.
And depending on the frequency of the two brainwaves that are coherent, and they have to follow Fibonacci scaling according to the Fibonacci numbers, what you get then is a torus in phase space. And the fact that Fibonacci, the brainwave frequency, center frequencies are related as Fibonacci numbers means that their ratios are irrational and they resist mode locking at the border of chaos, and so the halo can be stable, or the torus in phase space can be stable.
Well, you now, just went off a cliff on me there a little bit. You're going to have to slow down. I'm still working on the halo.
Well, some people can see auras.
Yes?
If somebody produces this particular brainwave pattern that we saw in the Zen master, you would say, any scientist, electrical engineer would be able to say, over his head there would be a torus in phase space. It's a mathematical abstraction. But I make a leap of sort of intuition, maybe a leap of faith, by saying that that's probably what people who describe halos are seeing. In fact, the traditional place to wear a yarmulke is exactly over the place of the brain where the halo is most likely to appear.
That's true. I guess that's true. That's going to take a little digesting on my part, yes.
Well, let me say this. We discovered this, you know, through a process of looking at... When we found the pattern in the Zen master...
Yes.
And in one of his advanced students, there was 30 students, beginner, intermediate, and advanced... And only one of them showed this pattern. I didn't know what it meant.
You keep saying this pattern.
It's a bimodal coherence pattern.
That doesn't do it either.
It's simultaneous coherence in alpha waves and theta waves at the same time.
Okay. And that's something you can look at with what machine?
Well, you measure the brainwaves, and then you have to analyze it with a statistical process called coherence analysis. And basically it says, are the waves sort of in phase?
Okay.
If they're coherent, they're in phase, same frequency and in phase.
So there really is a way you can measure coherence?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are computer programs that do that. In fact, you can even do feedback on coherence. When we introduced an analog of coherence to our training program in October of 95, the rate of profound spiritual experiences, which had doubled from 1 in 20 to 1 in 10, over 15 years of work, all of a sudden jumped from 1 in 10 to 3 out of 5 just by introducing half of the halo pattern into the feedback.
Really?
Yeah.
How many people who come to you statistically are seeking that kind of experience?
More now than in the beginning, because when I was doing university research, you know, I was just, we paid people to do the training.
Mm-hmm. Now they pay you.
Yes.
Again, though, what kind of percentage are seeking a mystical sort of experience?
I would say probably at least a third. Some of them want improvements in their business skills. Some of them want improvements in their relationship skills. Some people are looking at divorce, and they want to see if this can save their marriage.
Can it?
Yes. I've seen people come in with long lists of non-negotiable demands, heading for messy divorces. And for the first 3 days, maybe there'll be, metaphorically, blood on the floor. And then the alpha kicks in, and they connect with the love that caused them to become married in the first place. The long list of non-negotiable demands disappear and walk out hand in hand.
And the marriage is cured. All right, Dr. James Hart is my guest. And we're talking of, we're actually in a journey to the center of the mind. Stay right where you are. Phone lines open shortly.
No one can save me but you. Strange world desire, make foolish people live. I never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you. And I never dreamed that I'd
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed so. Dr. James Hart is my guest on this night, and a rainy night in the desert. It is indeed. If you have questions for him, that'll be coming up shortly. All you've got to do is stay planted. Once again, Dr. James Hart. Welcome back, Doctor. All right. Well, the audience has many, many questions. And so I'm tempted to do that shortly, but I do want to ask you first. I don't see that you have a book listed or anything. You certainly have a website. And so are you going to write a book?
Yes, indeed.
You are.
I have several books in process, but even more interesting, there's a book about to come out. It's written by Doug Boyd, and it's placed currently with a literary agent. It's called Adventure with a Cybernaut, and it talks about his own experience of the training. He's a published author. He's written Rolling Thunder, about a Native American medicine man, Swami Rama, another book called Mediums, Mystics, and Medicine People.
Doctor, you're going to have to stay close to that phone.
Okay.
All right. So you're recommending that book to the audience now?
Yes, and it's not out yet.
All right. About when?
Well, the literary agent is a publisher in mind, and it could be out within a month or two,
mm-hmm.
especially if you got some calls on it.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. You actually went to India and measured the brain of yogis, right?
Several times, yes.
Uh-huh. And what exactly did you figure out from that? And how did you apply that then to what you're doing now?
Well, I found out that there are major differences in the superconscious state of yogis than the superconscious state of Zen monks. In India, it's called samadhi,
uh-huh.
and in Japan, in the Zen tradition, it's called satori. Both are characterized by very high alpha, but with significant differences. A yogi in samadhi is gone to this world. You can bang cymbals in his ear, touch him with a branding iron, put his arm in a bucket of water for a half hour filled with ice. And his alpha just keeps going. It's like he's not there. And this goes along with the philosophy of yoga that all of four-dimensional space-time is an illusion, and there is a higher reality that you can get to with meditation.
When he's not there, doctor,
mm-hmm.
where is he?
Well, he's absorbed with the oneness, with the divine. His consciousness is united with the divine. This is how they would explain it.
I certainly have seen a number of science shows, and they have done a lot of measurements on
mm-hmm.
people like that, and they are remarkable. Indeed, they're remarkable. I mean, just the way they're able to regulate things that people should not be able to regulate with regard to their body, that's amazing. I'm not sure where it all leads, and I guess that's where you come in with the application of this.
Well, and see, this what we do is closer to Zen than yoga,
uh-huh.
because in the superconscious state in Zen, Satori, it's like they have one foot in the other world and one foot in this world, which is why the bullet trains run on time. They can make super large chips in their clean rooms, so they have mastery of this world and the transcendent world, which is unlike what you see in India. So in both the samadhi and satori, there's very high alpha, but the alpha in satori, in Zen, is interruptible by an event in the real world, what we would call the real world. And so it's a way that you can, in a sense, go back and forth, go into that state, get insights, bring them back. That's what happens in alpha. You go and you get insights, you bring them back, you apply them in the real world, make the world better.
I take it that your feeling is to get to the type one that Dr. Kaku was talking about last night, people are going to have to essentially go through this transformation in mass, or its equivalent.
Or at least a few liters. You can get a few liters faster than you can get to en masse.
Uh-huh. All right. Here comes a relevant question on the wild card line. You're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art and Dr. Hart.
Hello.
Hi. I believe in the shamanic tradition where the temple was a place one went to alter their consciousness, and the priest was the guide, and ayahuasca or some alkaloid was the facilitator. And I just can't help wonder, everybody, if this isn't science's symbolic replacement of the fact that we've used laws to cut us off from the old path.
All right. Doctor, what stops what you're doing here from becoming a new religion?
Well, for one thing, it adapts to everybody's religion.
That just means it's universal.
It's universal, absolutely.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And to answer the comment of the caller, which
yes.
was a very deep question, one of the things that brainwave feedback does is it profoundly democratizes spiritual experience, because instead of relying on a drug or a priest or a shaman or a yogi or a guru or whatever to put you into the altered state, you have the ability to do that on your own through the technology, which is simply an extension of your brain's ability.
Well, that's certainly a valid answer, but you danced a little bit on the psychedelic question earlier, mm-hmm. right?
Well, let me tell you a cartoon.
I'm sure your feet are still tingling a little, right?
Have you seen the cartoon Baba Rebop?
I have not.
In the newspaper, Four Frames.
No.
Baba Rebop is this yogi sitting on a ledge of the mountain. Western guy is climbing up the mountain. He stands in front of Baba and he says, "Oh, Baba, I'm so concerned about the problem of drugs in today's society."
Hmm.
And then the next frame, Baba's sitting there with an empty balloon over his head. He's thinking. And then he comes back and he says, "The only way to solve the problem of drugs in today's society is to improve reality."
Well, I guess I should start reading it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
This is Michael in Atlanta.
Hello, Michael.
I had a couple of comments. I've been very amused by your locking on to the psychedelics.
Well, it was everyone. I mean, we're talking about altered states, right?
Well, yeah, but every great mystic and mystical teacher has said once one after another that is not a useful path for one in 10,000.
And that's what Dr. Hart's
right. And so my question for him was, has he done any research with people who were already doing healing work and PK stuff and remote viewing and to see what the increase would be in their facility with these abilities?
That's a superb question, Doctor.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
There are a number of examples of this on the website. We've worked with medical intuitives. We've worked with people who are psychic in a variety of ways. And interesting, psychics have different brain waves than ordinary people.
Not surprising.
They have enhanced theta and delta waves.
His question, though, directly was, when you take these people already involved in these mm-hmm. disciplines, for example, remote viewing,
yeah.
are you able to assist them in even further enhancing
their skills become enhanced. In fact, I'm going to be at the Winter Brain Conference in February in Palm Springs, February 4 to 8, giving a paper and a workshop on how this training enhanced the ability of a woman who is a reader in the Akashic Records. And so if you're interested, you can either go to the conference or get the transcripts. But yes, it's a woman who was making her living as a reader in the Akashic Records. She came to do the training. She actually did the Alpha 1, the Alpha 2, and then she did the Theta 1. And in the Theta 1 training, her third week of training, her theta waves frontally exploded. This allowed her to go into the Akashic Records without the ritual, without the prayer, and boom, she was just right there and getting information from it.
Maybe you can settle a big dispute and an argument that's been going on for a long time. We hear all the time as we're growing up that we only use a part of our brain. Is that true?
Yes. Mm. It's a very tiny part.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. About how much of our brain does the average person honestly use? I mean, I'm assuming that with instruments we really can see how much is being used, how much is active, yes?
Yes. Well, and active in terms of, sometimes an area will be active, but it's the way that it's active that determines the pattern of brain waves that determines what the brain is doing. You can take somebody, and we increased the creativity of Stanford Research Institute scientists 50% in 1 week. Now,
wow.
How much of their brain were they using before? Well, that's only their creativity. What about if they did training to increase some of their remote viewing abilities or their psychic mm-hmm. healing abilities?
Yes.
I mean, the range of abilities that can be enhanced by this technology are beyond our present ability to imagine.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hello. Hello? Well, I guess, there's an example of somebody whose brain just stopped functioning at the instant I answered.
Or their telephone did.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Doug from Los Angeles.
Hello, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
I'm an artist, and just to give you a brief background, I've been exploring art as a medium to heal for 17 years, and my premise is to magnify, focus, and intensify the healing and therapeutic aspects of an image on the viewer. And I developed an image that has the 10 archetypes, according to Carl Jung, and was hooked up to biofeedback, neurofeedback, and had a kind of an epiphany. I reached a particularly high alpha state for a very long time, and I have to do a double-blind study to validate this, but I want to know from your experience, Doctor, what you know about whether an image, what you know about whether an image can be designed to heal or affect the alpha state in the viewer.
That's a good question.
Well, the Tibetans are famous for using yantra, various mantras that are images that are designed to produce specific effects in consciousness. One of the challenges is that alpha with the eyes open is way, way less powerful than alpha with the eyes closed.
Really?
Yes. If you want to increase your alpha, you know, 50, 60, 80%, just close your eyes.
So eyes wide closed.
Yes, right.
Very interesting. Why is that true, Doctor?
Well, the strongest alpha comes from the back of the head, which is the visual cortex of the brain.
In other words, you don't want any other input, I guess.
You don't want any other input. The brain, if it's doing busy work of sensory signal processing,
right,
you can't go into the deeper states.
Got it. Got it. All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hello.
Hi, I'm wondering if your guest is familiar with the MSA technology or Robert Monroe.
Both, yes.
Both, I would imagine, yes.
I actually have worked with some people who have gotten stuck in weird trance states by overusing the HemiSync technology. I have the same kind of problem with the HemiSync that I do with drugs, which is it's something that does something to you rather than you learning how to do something by yourself. I divide the world into two halves. One is inducement technologies in which drugs and HemiSync and Centerpoint and all that stuff fit.
Now, see, I've never heard that said about Dr. Monroe before, that anybody ever got stuck in a trance state.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true, huh?
Yeah, I've had people who did the HemiSync tapes for like 8 hours a day for 2 weeks, and they would get stuck in weird trance states.
That's a little scary. Caller, anything else?
That's all. Thank
all
you.
Right, all right. Thank you very much. Stuck. All right. Have you done enough research, Doctor, to be confident that with the process you're using of simply increasing the amount of alpha wave activity, people cannot become stuck? Or has there ever been a case?
No, there's never been a case of people getting stuck. People expand, they open their heart, they become more motivated. In fact, this is an opportunity to go back to the businessman question.
Okay.
I can remember one time I was talking to a businessman about stress reduction. And he said, I don't want any stress reduction. I need that stress to get me up in the morning and get me out the door.
That was my point.
Yeah. And so I said, well, could you imagine doing that out of enthusiasm, joy, exhilaration, rather than out of stress? And the blank look came over his face. He broke into a big smile, and he said, you know, I'm really headed for burnout. I'm a type A personality. My doctor's warned that I'm going to have a heart attack. Mm. Teach me.
Did you?
Yes.
And
alpha is like a silver bullet against anxiety.
And the result was for him?
The best year that he'd ever had in his life in business.
Mm. So he could still have the same energy level. Or even greater.
Or even greater, because stress wears you out, tires you out.
Absolutely.
I went at one point, I don't recommend this, but I went at one point 5 months sleeping 2 hours a night.
Not good.
Not good, but I was able to do it because of the alpha energy.
And
I would recommend, you know, more like 9 or 10 hours of sleep. But
yes,
if you have to, you can draw on it from within.
Aren't you depleting your natural reserves and tempting fate to do such a thing?
You know, if you are living in a high-stress state,
yeah,
and staying awake, it's different than if you're in a bliss state, staying awake, in terms of what it does to the body. I have, on occasion, gone into the chamber myself, having had, like, very little sleep, and connected with the alpha, and in a half an hour, 40 minutes, it's like I had a whole night of sleep, and the energy is sustained.
Describe the chamber to me.
Okay. They are the kind of chambers you would use for a hearing test.
Okay.
They're soundproof chambers. They have blue carpets on the floor, blue velvet on the walls, blue lamé on the ceiling. Speakers hang from the ceiling in tracks that can be brought up know, very close to your ears, so it's like having headphones on, but no weight, no, no tangle. And you're plugged in, you have electrodes on your head, they're gathered into a head box, hung on the wall behind you, and in front of you there's a table with a monitor and a keyboard. And as you make alpha waves, these beautiful musical tones fill the chamber. You hear flutes and oboes and organ music, and as you make more alpha, it's like the music of your mind. Some people, when they get really into it, they talk about it's like the symphony. So beautiful.
And answering honestly, is there anybody that you've put into the chamber or allowed to go into the chamber, assuming they're doing it always willingly, and then absolutely did not like what happened, was not able to achieve the state, additional alpha waves, or anything else, and just wanted to get the hell out of there?
Well, no, there's never been anybody like that.
Never?
There's been, we've run 3,000 people. There have been a few people who were claustrophobic who call out saying, oh, it feels like the walls are closing in.
Yes.
And I would call in on the intercom, just imagine that you're in the biggest space you've ever been in.
Yes.
And I go, oh. Because, you see, alpha is, alpha does to fear what the morning sun does to fog. It just evaporates it.
Huh. And so, even though there was a little initial panic in just a few, you were able to remove that and then proceed, and it worked?
Yeah. There have been three people that I've worked with out of the 3,000 that basically didn't get it. And there was something common to all of them. It was very interesting.
What was that?
They had all had major surgery under general anesthetic, and they nearly died. And so,
oh, really?
And so in their minds, they were holding on and not willing to let go.
Oh, well, now, that's really interesting.
At least in
they
six
had
or
all,
7 days.
Wait a minute. They had all had major surgery.
Uh-huh.
And
nearly died.
And nearly died. In other words, actually, are you saying they had NDEs?
No, no, they did not have NDEs.
They did not.
No, but, you know, if you've ever, you know, heard, like, what goes on in the operating room, the surgeons speak pretty coarse language. They, you know, it's part of their defense against the blood and gore that they're causing.
Yes.
And so, oh my God, we're losing this one. Oh, and then expletive, deleted, quick, do this. And so they're kind of like in a panic. Well, the people pick that energy up. Under hypnosis, many of them, you know, can be, you know, they can repeat what happened while they were in the operating room.
Yeah, that's awful. I mean, I can just imagine lying on the operating table. And the last things you ever hear in your life are 7 expletive deleted, you know?
Yeah.
Drop the damn thing.
Right.
Oh, no! All right, doctor, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Dr. James Hart is my guest. How are your alpha waves, folks? Sounds fascinating to a degree. But I don't like little places. I don't like little places.
Sweet dreams are made of things.
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Music has a profound effect on me, and I bet many, if not most of you, too. And when I say that, I really mean it. It's an altered state. When you really get into music, it's absolutely profound and an altered state. Saxophone, for example, can do that to me. I'm sure if they were measuring my brain while I was listening to a good sax like this, they'd see something different was going on. Dr. James Hart back in a moment. There seems no end to what this process can do. But the question I think I have about it will be exemplified by the following. You said, Doctor, that you could take, for example, somebody who was about to get a divorce, put them through this, and at the end of it, they realize the original love they had for that person, and all is well again in the marriage. Right?
Yes.
Right?
That's a very typical result.
Okay.
You even had divorced people get remarried after going through the training.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
But couldn't it also have a different result? In other words, for example, somebody who was in a happy relationship, or so they thought, would have some realization while in this altered state that it's not for them at all and come out and get a divorce.
Well, we can speculate, in fact, but the results of the training are that it opens your heart, it enhances love, and I can think of only one instance, and it's almost a humorous instance, in which people in the training, a husband and wife, decided to get divorced.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you the story, if I may.
Well, you may. I'd be interested, yes.
It was an elderly couple. Their children had grown and they had gone, and they loved each other very much, but they didn't like each other. But they loved each other so much that they were staying together and not revealing to the other person the fact that they really didn't like being together.
Uh-huh. Exactly what I was after.
Exactly. And so in the truth-telling that went on in the training,
mm-hmm.
When they both realized that neither one of them wanted to live with each other any longer, and that's what the other one wanted, their love was so great that they hugged, they kissed, and they walked out hand in hand after the training to go get a divorce.
So, you know, the results then are not always predictable.
You know, they're not. And sometimes we are very surprised by that. We're continuing to learn things. I am a student of this process myself, and I'm always learning. It's a very humbling experience.
I'm sure.
Go in and encounter. Can I talk about the thing you said on music on the break?
Yes, please.
You said that you really get into music sometimes, especially saxophone.
Completely carried away.
Yeah. The getting into, that is an altered state. It's known as merging.
It's absolutely an altered state. And, you know, you already mentioned you use music in the feedback portion of what you do.
Music helps you stop thinking. It stops discursive thinking. There are five hallmarks of the mystical experience. They are intense realness, unusual sensation. 3, transsensate phenomena, things that come to you from beyond the realm of the senses. The experience of unity or oneness, this merging you were talking about. And the 5th one is ineffability or unable to be adequately described in words. And all of those occur with regularity in this training.
Is there anything about what you do, Doctor, that might eventually offer us real proof about whether what we're experiencing when we're having a mystical experience is a product of our mysterious, wonderful brains, or whether there is actually an exterior force either being sensed, communicated with, or existent.
Sure, and you can design experiments for that. One humorous example, sort of, it relates kind of to remote viewing. There's several kinds of remote viewing. For a while, I had a satellite office in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And one day, a young highway patrol officer was referred to us by the North Carolina Highway Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been involved in a critical incident. He'd come upon a wreck, and there'd been children badly mangled, and he went into shock, and he couldn't be a highway patrol officer. So they sent him to us.
Mm-hmm.
And starting on the third day, he would have out-of-body experience. And he would, during his alpha enhancement, he would go out of body, he would fly to western part of the state where his wife and two small children, like 1 and 3, live, and he would check in on them. He ran his family like a military dictatorship. He himself had gone into the patrol because his father, I think he was an orphan, he wanted military discipline, he wanted male discipline. And he ran his family that way. The little boys had to salute and stand at attention and say yes, sir.
Holy mackerel.
So one day, I think it was like the fourth or fifth day, he flew there, and they weren't at home. When he came out of the chamber, he was very agitated because he had given his wife strict orders. She was not allowed to leave the house unless he was there, and she wasn't there.
Mm-mm.
So he wouldn't do his interview until we let him make a call. And so he called home, got his wife, and it turned out that she had, in fact, snuck out of the house. Her sister had come by to pick her up and go shopping. They knew he wouldn't find out because he was in Raleigh for the week.
Wow. Well.
Busted.
Yeah, busted.
It also went further because in the course of the training, he healed that part of himself which was missing his father, the father energy, and so he actually no longer needed the discipline of the highway patrol. And one of the consequences of this training was that after the training, he resigned from the highway patrol. They had wanted us to make him a good soldier
again. Yes, I've got it.
But he went beyond that.
Yes, I've got it. So certainly you can end up with the unexpected consequence.
Three of the 24 Green Berets that we trained decided that they had a higher calling and left the service. Now, the officers were pleased with this because they were always looking for methods to get rid of people who weren't 100% committed.
I was going to say something like that could cost you funding if the percentage became too high.
Well, you see, these were very interesting Green Berets. They were being trained for the Trojan Warrior Project, which was they were to go behind enemy lines in a case of hostilities and develop rapport with the local population.
Uh-huh.
So we were training them in skills which increased their rapport, their likability, their ability to blend in. Humanizing.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hello.
How are you doing? All right.
Just fine, sir.
That's great. Yes, I was just calling to find out if in these studies, if people can regress back and possibly prevent health problems and actually be able to, and then instill health in themselves so that they may live longer. And we hear tales that in the future man is going to live longer in the first place. So.
Well, thanks to medical science, we already are living longer now, but it is a valid question. We know our brains have an awful lot to do, doctor, with a lot of things, like my loss of weight when I wanted to, or, gee, I guess we can do a lot of things, really. So what about major, let's say somebody had some very serious disease. Could they put a part of their brain to work that would actually have an effect on that disease? And if so, do you have any documentation of that happening?
Well, this is not an area that we've specifically studied, but we have had case studies where this has happened. In terms of many diseases, there are what are called spontaneous remissions or regressions.
Right.
And so they typically happen in people who are happier, more motivated. If people sink into depression, you can pretty well write them off. They're not going to come back. And so if you can intervene at the mind level, that is an effective area to intervene in. Now, there's also a human immortality gene. I don't know if you know this.
No, but proceed.
In the I think it was the February 9th issue of Science Magazine in 1991.
February 9th.
There was an article which documented the discovery of the first human immortality gene. It is located on chromosome number 1. And so there are genetic bases to anticipate being able to activate things like this. But also, if you look at the type A personality.
Wait a minute. What is an immortality gene?
Cancer cells are immortal.
They absolutely are.
They do not die from old age. If you feed them, they will continue to grow.
Right.
They've learned how to turn off the Hayflick limit switch. And so they can divide endlessly. So if you couple that with brainwave training, so that you remove psychological causes of disease, you have an enhanced wellness from both the biological and the psychological perspective.
Okay, I understand that cancer is, in essence, in a way, immortal.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't know what you mean by the immortality gene. Are you saying they've discovered a gene that they believe creates cellular growth at some incredible
rate?
Well,
the reference is February 9th, 1991, Science Magazine.
Okay.
And, to find out that there is a gene that can promote immortality is, of course, very exciting.
Very exciting, yes.
But we can do a lot also with our minds. If you look at the type A personality, there are subcategories of the type A that are most at risk of heart disease. Those are the ones that have cynicism and a sense of time urgency.
Hmm.
And with this training, you can take people who are cynical, which is a kind of a hostility that's in some kind of a way turned inward, and you can have them forgive whatever it was that put them in that state, and they can do forgiveness, and then the cynicism goes away and is replaced by joy.
Some people, doctor, would call me cynical. Other people might look at me, for example, and say, no, realistic. Now, is it not realistic to perhaps be somewhat cynical in today's world?
Well, skeptical, certainly.
And, cynical, even.
I can remember when John Alexander first came and did the training in 1983, we were talking about paranoia. He said that paranoia is simply having all the facts.
Huh.
a different take on it. But cynicism and skepticism are very different. A skeptic is open. They may not have the data, but they're welcoming the data. They bring the data in. They evaluate it, and if necessary, they change their mind. A cynic is somebody who's got a kind of a twisted anger. And anger is, whether it's in a CEO or in a policeman or in a school teacher or in a child, it's always unhealthy. And it always will lead to bad things.
It's always unhealthy.
Anger is always unhealthy.
Oh, wait. Cynicism doesn't automatically equate anger, does it?
I think cynicism is a form of anger.
Why can't it be born of realistic observation of the world?
Well, because it isn't just skepticism, which, as I said, can be very productive, but it's colored then with a hostile, angry sort of undertone.
Hmm. Okay, I'm not sure I agree with that fully.
Okay.
I think one can be skeptical without being angry. One can be cynical even.
I agree.
One can be cynical even without being angry.
I think if you go into somebody who's cynical, you will find anger.
We deal with basic
emotions, sadness, right. Anger, fear, and joy.
All right. And the West of the Rockies line as well. Hi there.
Thanks for having me on, Art.
You're very welcome.
I wanted to ask, basically bring up, there was a book written in 1970 by one of the translators of the Dead Sea Scrolls. His name was John M. Allegro. He wrote two books. One was The Dead Sea Scrolls and The Christian Myth.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And he goes on to show that that the ancient Hebrews and the ancient Christians all participated in using the Amanita muscaria mushroom in order to altered states in order to, you know, have the visions that they had. And he also shows that that it's very much in the Bible in several different places. And he does this through a philological argument. Basically, he gives this etymological argument that shows that the Sumerians were actually the culture from which the Indo-European languages and also the Semitic languages came out of. But anyways, people were using, you know, the Amanita muscaria mushroom in order to achieve these states. And I just think
well, I've been
that
down
it's hard
this
to believe
road.
That
I've been down
be
this, sir, hold it. I've been down this road pretty hard with the doctor. Do you have a different avenue you're going down? I mean, sure.
Well, to me it just seems that, you know, it's just like one of the earlier callers said that we know the real way at which to get at these altered states, but they've been made illegal in our culture, and I think that it's something that down the line has been, you know, one of the reasons why Christianity was probably originally made illegal was because, you know, these were essentially people that we know now from the Dead Sea Scrolls were probably the ancient Essenes and were communists, you know, living in different parts of the Roman Empire helping, you know, probably people, you know, get away from their slave masters and
look,
so forth.
Look, think of it this way. Governments hate altered states. They really hate them. And I'm not sure that it matters from where they come. The natural method, which Dr. Hart is talking about, is one way. Certainly some substances, as he pointed out very heavily, are, would be another way. Either way, it's my contention, Doctor, that the government hates these altered states usually, and the reason for that is productivity.
Mm-hmm.
People who are in altered states are, from the government's point of view,
Not productive.
And that's really what led to, you know, the whole opium thing and the crackdown. And, you know, experiments have been tried. But I'm sure you say this is cleanly so different that, in fact, will make people more productive.
It does.
I knew you'd say that.
You can have your cake and eat it, too. You can have your altered states and be more productive, more creative, higher IQ. You know, if you took a company and you trained everybody in the company, it'd be an interesting experiment. I would welcome somebody who has a small company where we could do this study.
Mm-hmm.
Train everybody in the company with this process, and they have a 50% boost on average in creativity, a 12-point boost in IQ. They're going to be very effective in competition, particularly since their motivation, their ability to communicate with their customers or suppliers, even their competition, is going to be enhanced.
If a company, if somebody, you know, who owned a company out there believed what you were saying right now and came to you, do you have the evidence to place in front of him, to prove to him that you can achieve that with his workers?
Increased creativity and increased IQ? Absolutely, we do have that evidence. And we can also do some suggestive evidence that their health care costs are going to be dramatically lowered. Because when you get rid of the stress, people aren't going to go into burnout. They're going to have less absenteeism, less illness. They're going to just perform better.
Okay. International Line, you're on the air with Dr. Hart. Hello.
Hi, Art. Hi, I'm calling from Vancouver, B.C.
Welcome.
Hi. I very much tend to believe and support your guest's findings in regards to how brainwaves can be fine-tuned to improve an individual's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if James has ever heard of a handheld relaxation device that people can use at home. It releases microcurrents into the cranium, and it eliminates depression and anxiety and negative thought patterns, and I guess fear and anger, because it increases clarity of thought, and it also improves relationships.
Just a handheld device.
Yeah, it's by Soda Instruments. It's called the BioTuner or the Brain Tuner, and it's invented by Dr. Robert Beck back in the 70s. And
that
it's similar.
Hold on. Does that sound familiar to you, Doctor?
I don't know that particular one, but it's in a category that I consider to be dangerous.
Well, it harmonizes.
Wait a minute. Hold it. That was important. He said, in a category I consider to be dangerous. Why, Doctor?
Because it released, she said, that it puts currents into the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The FDA came down really hard on this. Because that's like a drug, only it's going directly into the electrical activity of the brain. Very dangerous. FDA shut that down.
Okay, and how does that differ from your process?
People learn through feedback. Oh, let me give you an example. If you stand in front of a mirror, the mirror is not going to make you smile or frown. But if you need to, say you're going to be an actress in a play, you need to make a particular smile and a particular frown, you can use the mirror to get feedback to from working from within to change your facial expression. But
and
the mirror doesn't do it to you.
And so your system process is like a mirror.
Yep. It's a mirror for the mind.
A mirror for the mind. All right. Hold on. Dr. James Hart is my guest. From the high, soggy desert, I'm Art Bell.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always miss with these eyes before. Just what the truth is. We could buy.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
If only you believed, as I believe. Well, I wonder how important belief is to this process. If somebody didn't believe, or perhaps was too cynical, would that be a big fat zero? In a moment, we'll ask Dr. Hart. Once again, Dr. James Hart. Dr. Hart, I realize that the majority of the people you work with, obviously, well, I guess are pretty much volunteers and people who want this experience, people who have perhaps even a certain expectation about what will happen. If somebody sufficiently cynical or not wanting to do this were subjected to it, what would happen?
Very good question. During the break, I grabbed Webster's New World Dictionary to look up cynical, which means inclined to question the sincerity and the goodness of people's motives and actions,
mm-hmm.
or even the value of living.
Oh,
secondary
my.
Definition is morose, sarcastic, and sneering.
Well, the value of living, that's a little overboard.
Uh-huh. Cynical implies a contemptuous disbelief
yes.
in human goodness and sincerity.
Yes.
So, okay, what about, we've got someone like this. Now,
yes.
It turned out that some of the people that we trained were ordered to do this training. The Green Berets were one group.
I'm with you, so they would have resentment going in.
Some of them did.
Yes.
In fact, we even had one guy, he was referred by a judge who said, you will do this training or you will go to jail.
No kidding.
He was drinking and beating his wife.
Oh.
And the nicest thing I could say about him was that he was ignorant and averse to learning.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I wonder how. I'm curious how this. I'm curious how this judge had enough faith in the program to so order.
Indeed, yes.
At any rate, he did.
He did. And the person. It was interesting. The person was had actually been adopted into a wealthy family in the East Bay.
Uh huh.
And what he did was, in his mind, the one thing that he really liked to do was to take apart engines and rebuild engines. So in his mind, he would go down to the shed, and he would take apart and rebuild engines, and that was, for him, a non-thinking bliss state. And so he went into high alpha doing it, and the alpha so healed him that he stopped drinking, he stopped beating his wife. 2 years later, I got a call from somebody who said that he was that person, didn't sound at all like him. And he said, you know, I've become a model citizen, I'm a respected member of the community, and I really want to thank you for what you did in the training.
Wow.
Similarly, we had two 12-man teams of Green Berets, and one of the two teams, their leader was really hostile and cynical and didn't want to have to do this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And let me mention why he kind of had that idea. Remember I said that before they did the training, they went to a months-long meditation encampment?
Yes, all of this is very un-Green Beret-like.
Very un-Green Beret.
Yes.
They did not like meditation.
No.
Sitting there doing nothing.
Right.
A lot of them said, this is BS, I'm out of here. Others would say, no, give it a chance. And they actually had fist fights in the meditation hall.
Ah.
Because, and when they came back from that, all of their alpha levels were lower than before they went off on the month's meditation retreat, I mean encampment.
The fist fights sound more like it.
Yeah.
For Green Berets.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so then they went to the alpha training. And
yes.
They took to it like ducks to water.
Yeah.
They found that it was meaningful. I have to say, of all the people that I've worked with, I have never worked with people that I liked as much as the Green Berets, because they had an ethos of training. Every day they would get up determined to be better in some way at the end of the day that was mission-related.
Yes, absolutely. So,
and
doctor,
so they would, if there was a belief in their way or an attitude, they would just toss it out of the way and charge forward, and they made huge progress. They were
then,
a wonderful group to work with.
So then on balance, doctor, do you think that you turned them into more efficient potential killers?
When, you know, if killing is your job, you better be efficient and effective at it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So, do you think that might have been the end result?
Indeed, and I know that some of them were involved in teaching Aikido to other groups of soldiers. And we heard reports back that they were teaching other troops, and they were saying, well, now, to really get this move, you have to go into an alpha state, and it's kind of like, so they were using what they
You know, you might end up with government money after all.
Yes.
Let's go, I don't know, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Art, and hi, Doctor.
Hi.
Hello.
Let's see, I had a question about the $15,000 cost for this. First of all, I just wanted to say that the system of technology and training sounds wonderful, but I'm one of those people who can't afford $15,000, and so when you talked about your technology and training being able to democratize the opportunity to have the experiences of the yogis and Zen masters and so forth, I was just wondering, are you doing anything to make this system available to those who can't afford the $15,000?
Well, yeah. We have time payment programs. People can use credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like with all technologies, there are economies of scale. So as this grows, the cost will come down.
And the major cost involved in this now?
Well, we have about $1 million in technology. We've got computer programmers and engineers working continuously to upgrade both the software and the hardware. And to give you an idea, you know, if there's any people out there that would like to be trainers for this process.
So you've got a lot of money in it now.
And the trainers work hard. The trainers are there about 16 to 17 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It's a hard
and
day.
Sometimes 3 trainings a month. Now, I don't know many professionals that are willing to do that for any price.
No, that's quite
single
right.
Single parents with small children need not apply.
Mm-hmm. Let's go offshore. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning or late evening.
Whatever it is, yes. Where are you, by the way?
St. Joe's, Costa Rica.
Costa Rica. Oh, cool. All right.
Doctor, do you think your process would have any effect or could be used with a person who is totally blind, 00 vision?
Ah, good question.
I've worked with some blind people. One of the Zen masters that we trained was blind, and there are two options. What I've done is to sit in a beanbag chair in the chamber next to the person, and when the scores come up, I read them to him. Alternatively, we could use voice synthesis.
Yes, I would think the process for a person who is not sighted might even be easier. In a way, I mean, you did say that it's eyes wide shut, right?
Yes.
And so so wouldn't they be less distracted by external stimuli than a sighted person?
Yes, and you do need to interact with the mood scale program, but that can again be done by voice synthesis, or somebody can read the words to them, and then they can, you know, key in their answer.
Okay, so bottom line, there's no problem without. Okay, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, this is Tim.
Hello, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Yes, Tim. Fine. Go ahead.
I was wondering about if Dr. Hart knows anything about dementia, whether you could cure anything like that with a biofeedback machine or his process.
All right. No, that's a wonderful question, and really I meant to come back to it. With regard to mental illness, whatever it might be, or dementia, is there anything in the process that helps in those areas? And that's a fascinating area of research, I would think.
Well, many dementias have at their base a cerebral vascular insufficiency, meaning reduced blood flow to the brain.
Right.
And if you can learn alpha training, you're learning to increase the alpha. Now, this happens, for example, I've done some preliminary work with Parkinson's people where they have theta and delta. Their brains are not getting enough alpha. They go into a dementia. There are Alzheimer's dementias. Now, we're not talking about a cure. We're talking about reversing temporarily some of the symptoms by increasing blood flow to the brain.
Okay, so I guess that's a yes. This would seem to be an area where well-documented work could be done.
Oh, yes.
Because you've already got some sort of diagnosis, right?
And if we have a psychiatric diagnosis, like schizophrenia, paranoia, depression,
yes,
anxiety, we know exactly what to do with there. Those situations, those kinds of constellations, it's like your brain is like a computer, and your personality is like the operating system. And if you load a different operating system, the computer performs differently, even though it has the same hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've got a bad program running, you know, you can reprogram it with the brainwave training.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hi.
Hi. I'm in San Antonio.
Okay. You're going to have to speak up good and loud for us, because
I'm in San Antonio.
Yes.
And I work for a really big health insurance company that actually sent all of us a few months ago to some training on our day off, like a program that helps you with your coherence.
Yes.
And I was wondering if that was good, because most of the people were very mad at having to go on their day off.
Yeah. Well, they shouldn't have sent them on their day off. Do you remember the nature of the training, ma'am?
Yes, it was it was a program called HeartMath. And basically what you were doing, you put your finger in a little finger thing to measure your pulse rate, and you had to try to, think good thoughts and breathe out the bad and breathe in through your heart. And
that's biofeedback, right, Doctor?
Yes. It's not brainwave biofeedback, but, yes, it's the form of feedback.
Right. And basically at the end of the training, which it was 2 days of training,
mm-hmm,
4 hours a day, so it was an 8-hour training, all overtime, which was good for me. But basically, at the end, they had like a little program where you close your eyes, you listen to the little music that they had, something that they have on the net is like called Heart Something, Heart Zones by Doc Childare. And you close your eyes and you visualize all the good things. And at the end, you get a picture on the screen when you open your eyes. And it's like a forest with little deer and all kinds of happy things. And the people that didn't do too good didn't get all the happy details. And the people that did got rainbows and bunnies and, you know. So I was wondering, is that a good thing? Because I suffer a lot from anxiety and depression.
Did it help you?
It did at the time.
Okay. Well, then that brings up this question, Doctor. Is this a lasting change? If somebody goes through a week of this at $15,000 or whatever it costs, is it a lasting change, or does it need to be renewed and enforced every now and then?
Well, the answer is yes and no. First of all, in all learning, your retention is a function of how much overlearning you do. And so 2 days is typically not going to be enough of just about anything. That's one of the reasons we do seven. If we could put it, plan it into 2 days, we wouldn't plan seven. But in the federal grant, we actually have funding to do a six-month follow-up and a 12-month follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And people with no clue, I mean, some, I heard some of the ladies when they were leaving begging their technicians to tell them something they could do to keep this wonderful thing going.
Mm-hmm.
We were not allowed to even say, meditate. We couldn't tell them anything. They just had to be thrown out on their own for a year.
Wow.
And with no clues to do anything, their personality profiles continued to improve in areas that were related to areas on the head where they had increased their alpha. And so I like to say that...
So a yes and a no.
Well, then the no comes in, whereas is it possible to go further? And so, you know, people sometimes come back and do what we call tune-ups. In fact, maybe I could tell a story there?
Story away.
Okay. This was a businessman. Actually, he was a venture capitalist. And he had had a very profound experience in his training. And thereafter, Klaus Ivan on website. Okay. Best, you know, period of his life after his training in terms of his business. But he did something else that was very interesting. He was a Stanford MBA, and he was an electrical engineer. Very hot property in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so every 2 years he would come back for a four-day tune-up. And he would have headhunters after him. Headhunters are recruiters where
yes.
they're recruiting him for other businesses.
Yes.
And he would take the first 2 days to kind of get back into the alpha. And then on the third day, he would one at a time review each one of the business offerings. He would live it out in his mind and see what his alpha scores were. And an action, and you know, like, okay, Western Regional Marketing Manager for Hitachi, and who, what kind of people would he talk to, what kind of projects, what kind of travel, and then he would see what his scores were.
Used for specific decision-making.
Exactly. And then on the fourth day, he would repeat that to confirm,
mm-hmm.
and what he would do, even before he left, he would pick up the phone and he would call the recruiter whose offering consistently gave him the highest alpha, knowing that if he was living his bliss, kind of like Joseph Campbell, that he'd have more fun, he'd make more money, and his career just went up like a rocket.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Mark. My name's Ray, calling from Tallahassee, Florida.
Good morning.
And a fabulous guest. I hope you have him on again. Dr. Hart, you started to tell a story, and you got sidetracked. You started to tell a story about the guy that did TM for 20 years.
Oh,
what
yeah.
was that story?
Okay, thank you. This guy had done all the programs in TM, and then he hadn't gotten what he wanted, and he dropped out, and he was cruising around the world going to shamans and swamis and, you know, looking for, you know, the high. Well, when he came out of the chamber on one of the days, he had this radiance about him, and he said, you know, what happened to me today was more powerful than what happened in 20 years of TM. And then there was like a shudder that ran through his whole body, and he smiled more broadly, and he said, no, if you would add up everything that's happened in 20 years of TM, it wouldn't equal what happened to me today.
That is quite a story. To be sure, I think we can squeeze one more in. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. James Hart. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Not a lot of time, hon. So, what is your first name?
Julia.
Okay, Julia, what's up?
I wanted to know, first of all, I can't be hypnotized. Would that make a difference?
Very, actually, in a lot of ways, a very good question. There are people, doctor, who cannot be hypnotized, or at least it certainly seems so. In other words, they simply are not subjects that can be hypnotized.
Totally irrelevant. Both Buddha and Sigmund Freud experimented with hypnosis when they were developing their systems. They found it powerful, but in the end, both Buddha and Freud excluded hypnosis from their system for the same reason. It put the locus of control somewhere else than in the conscious mind.
But hypnosis surely qualifies as an altered state.
It does. Absolutely. Absolutely. But an altered state in which the unconscious is in control. And that's why both Gautama Buddha and Sigmund Freud excluded it from their systems, because they wanted the conscious mind to be in control, which is what you get in neurofeedback.
Uh-huh. So the fact that you could not be hypnotized wouldn't have the first bit of effect with this biofeedback system, because it's all conscious.
It's all conscious, super conscious in some cases.
How would you delineate between an altered state of hypnosis and the state somebody's in when they're producing tsunamis of alpha?
Well, for one thing, they're in conscious control. The conscious mind, there are many levels of mind, and the Buddhists, for example, have like 150 levels of attainment that they know about, they describe, they can talk about.
Right.
And so what we're talking about is going to higher and higher levels of awareness.
All right, look, there's a link on our webpage, I'm certain, to yours, but we're at the end of the program. So your website is www.biocybernaut.com, right?
Yes, it is.
That's biocybernaut.com.
And there's a publications box on the homepage. If you click on that, it'll take you to over 100 pages of scientific papers organized by category.
All right. Well, my friend, I want to thank you for being here. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the air, and take care.
Art, thank you so much for the invitation.
Good night. And to all of you out there, a perfect weekend. Really a wonderful weekend. Thank you all very much. See you next weekend. This is Crystal Gale, and yes, it was written for me. Good night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it till tomorrow? Will the sun shine?